can do the noble and uplifting work that they do. But in right-wing Peggy Nooner's world, we all just need to work for free. Somebody had to say it sooner or later, and I guess Peggy Nooner is as good as anyone else. That's what Republicans want. That's what the right wing wants. They want us all to work for free. Somehow that doesn't meet that whole inspiring, dreaming, looking boldly into the future threshold I was talking about. Does it for you?
Yeah, me neither.
A further challenge coming in, by the way, from News Ninja Susan. She says she'll also match up to $50 for anyone who wishes to contribute. So that makes 100. And that will make 200. And that will make next week a little less sweaty, because I'll pay bills on Monday before we leave for Kentucky. So that's where we begin with this Friday on the front porch. Nice crop of blinking lights going on here. Let's see who all we have. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Not much. I just wanted to comment on a few things regarding the. Regarding the America thing, I think people need to keep in mind one thing. While painful as it is, it is, in my opinion, it's healthy to go through these depressions, recessions, because it leads us to elevation and enlightenment. And it may be a period of great pain and strife and all of that, but it really does bring out the best in us. Otherwise, Bob, if we stay at the top and we continue to just be the nation of greatness, and someone keeps telling you you're great, you're great, you're great, you're great, you become numb to that. So it's good we have a point like this in history where we're starting to decline, because I ultimately believe that will come an age of enlightenment. But
those ages of enlightenment, and I think I know what you're talking about, David. I mean, for instance, consider the Harlem Renaissance that took place during the Great Depression.
Right.
There was a federal government that was incubating that. There were people with grand visions. FDR, by a radio microphone, telling the entire nation that we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, for 8 years of George W. Bush, we were told we had nothing but fear. Y'all afraid yet? Good. And in these last few years of Barack Obama, sadly, he has not risen. You know, he's done some stirring rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
but not just a heck of a lot in the way of really calling America to its potential greatness. So, I think that economic hard times can be enervating. But only if there are people willing to, there's someone out there calling us to rise above it. And right now, that call is not being made, David.
Oh, I agree with you completely, but I don't think it's to the president's detriment. More so, I think, because of his style and his tone of how he addresses the nation regarding certain issues in progress is we misinterpret it. And pretty much, I still am at the cusp that I still think that this is all Barack Obama can do, because if he rises the tone any more higher, we're going to have a nation be stirred by the quote unquote angry black president. Even though he won't be angry, he's just saying, you know, I think we should do this, and I think we should do that, and this is what I plan on doing. And that's the problem we face. You know, Adam Suhr had a great article in the Nation regarding Michael Moore and Bill Maher's comments about what kind of president we should have. And he made the point that these are white men of privilege talking about how a president should act. And that's a problem, Bob, because automatically we assume, and this is a problem that's serious with progressives, serious problem with progressives. We just assume because this guy's a black president, he should lean this way. This is the way he's got to lean. But he has his own mind and he has his own direction. So that's where I find myself, and that's where I'm glad to see people like Marr and Moore finally being called to the table on that.
Well, maybe I need to be called out too. For me, it's not an issue of skin color. For me, it is an issue of a nation direly in need of real visionary leadership from the single office that our governmental structure contains, where that can be done.
I get that completely.
And it ain't happening, David.
I get that completely, but the way it's going to be perceived as we're ordering the black man around. If a white person gets out in front, this is how it is. I'm sorry if a lot of progressives are angry at that. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. You want to force this president to do something? That's the way it's going to come down to. That's just how it is. Right now, that's how it is. Who knows what it'll be like in 10 or 20 years, but that's how it is right now. That is why we need to be careful in a circumstance like that. And Bob, let me add this. The right wing will jump on that and push that narrative farther and say, yeah, these people are right. He needs to get more angry. And they'll have their shows come out and their trolls, you know, like, what was it? Oh, Nader was on Fox. And, you know, I shake my head at that. Why would you go on Fox, and why would you go on the Neil Cavuto show? And he was on the Neil Cavuto show, and basically Neil was leading him on, saying, so, sorry, what you're saying is you think the president should be a little bit more forceful, a little bit more angry? And this is what I'm talking about, Bob. They're leading you. They're leading all of the progressives and all the liberals in that direction.
Well, somewhere out there, David, somewhere out there, there is a media analyst or specialist or some PR flack who is telling people like Ralph Nader that there is something to be gained by going on Fox.
I would love to know the name of that media analyst's name.
There's no dearth of them. There are, because the thinking goes like this, David.
Yeah.
Well, if the people who watch Fox don't ever hear your ideas, well, you know, you don't have the chance to change their minds. And that just makes the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck and the little vein.
Yeah.
My eyes get all road mappy with little red lines running through the whites toward the blue. You know, that's what we call Bob's patriotic eyes when they're red, white, and blue. And I get all mad.
Yeah.
Because the hubris of thinking that you can talk to a teabagger. Jesus, what a fool's errand that is. You know, I'm sorry. I'm in Reverbo's camp on this one. You tell them, we've stood here by the bus, by the train, by the blimp, and we've said, y'all come. Come on now. We're going into the future now.
Yeah.
And after a while, you just get on, you close the doors, and you damned well go. These, the teabaggers and the rest of these benighted fools laboring in darkness and cursing candles every step of the way, screw them. It's time to leave them behind. Goodbye now. Goodbye.
Well, you know what the amazing thing about that Ralph Nader interview, and I watched the whole thing, was he basically had no clue. Nader was in space about Neil Cavuto's background. He's like, you know how it is, Neil. You know how the Republicans are. And Neil's like, yeah, right. He was completely tone deaf that Neil was just setting him up. Yeah.
Ralph, did somebody tell you were coming on MSNBC, buddy? This is Fox.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He's on Fox. And, oh, by the way, kudos to Chris Hayes getting a morning show after Joe Scarborough.
Is that... Now, wait a minute. I think that's just a weekend show.
Oh, is it? Well, okay. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, but I think it comes on Sunday morning, and it's preempting 1 hour of prison programming or something on MSNBC?
Like I said, you got to.
You got to start somewhere. I know.
Yeah. I'm glad. I am for any time that Chris Hayes gets on the.
That's probably. But think back, David. That's probably the slot they wanted Cenk Uygur to fill.
It probably is, and you know,
because remember, Cenk said they were willing to pay me more money to go away and do a weekend show that no one would watch.
Yeah, I worry about the fact that they're setting up Chris Hayes' show to fail so they can put more right-wing programming. Because even Chris Hayes made a mention. It's going to be a bit of.
Would that be even marginally surprising?
No, it wouldn't be. Wouldn't be surprising at all. That's the way. That's the way the corporate media works. That's the way they operate. And that's why I say to people who always seem to clap when we get progressive and liberal programming, I always say always have a wait-and-see attitude to this because they can pull the rug out anytime they want.
And, you know, Susan is pointing something out via email as well, David. She says, please remember, and I mentioned this the other night on the show, remember that the Republicans financed in large part Nader's third-party run in 2000.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that, but my main point is that I think Nader is just so spaced out on his own views and his own ideology and his own ego, quite frankly, that he doesn't really pay attention, or he's completely tone deaf to a lot of the flanks that are out there, and he thinks that, you know, I can reason with them. Kind of like in the same way, I guess he has kind of like a Obama syndrome as well. I can reason with these guys. But Ralph, he's a Nazi. No, I got this one.
Sorry, that one just kind of grabbed me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we find ourselves. And
he's Nazi.
Really
no, I got about. This one.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about the flooding of media and the repetition cycle that we're going through. What you were talking about, how they're programming us to respond to 9/11 is an infomercial, just one long infomercial. And I don't think there is really an answer to that, except keep on building progressive media and don't listen to any of the naysayers that say, well, I think we should just stop and go home. There's too many people who depend on on the future of this media thriving. And who knows how long it's going to be rocky for, but that's the way it is. That's just the way you have to look at it from here on. You have to look and say, oh, well, our media is very small and dinky, but we can continue to build this and it'll be bigger in the future.
You know, I mean, sometimes I'm just stricken for words.
Right.
Because, well, I had a, well, no. I don't know. We've had this conversation before, David. And I don't
right.
know. I don't know how we get through to people about not to people, but to people with money about media. You know, like I said last night, I desperately hope that Al Gore's TV effort succeeds. God knows, you know, I'd be happy to go and help to an extent.
Right.
But it's like that tree falling in the forest and nobody being around. You know, how many? He's got to build viewership. He's got to get it. You know, it's in a way, it's a bigger hole or a bigger hill to climb than over-the-air broadcast TV is.
Right.
Because you have to get the agreement of the massive right-wing-dominated, right-wing-owned cable cartels to pick up your programming. And hopefully not put it on tier 17 at channel 512 so that only people who are paying $199 a month can see the channel. You've got to get that Fox ubiquity going there.
Right.
But the problem is, even if we identify the problem as we've done here, how do you convince people who are clueless?
That is going to be a big hurdle to overcome. But I think, and this is what I believe in a way of how ideology works. When a pendulum when a pendulum shifts and a window opens, I always say, always set a timer to that window or that pendulum shifting in your direction, and move, and do as much as possible as you can. Because I believe we're going to have that window open, and quite possibly it's opening just a little bit right now with the way things are going.
Well, I mean, there's polling data that just came out that makes absolutely no sense at all. Sometimes, lately, it doesn't make much sense. New York Times just sent out an alert, and I get them. And, at the same time that Barack Obama's personal support is sliding downward, polling data indicates that the people of the United States kind of like the jobs plan that he put out.
You mean the jobs plan is going to get hammered to smithereens?
Right, that the Republicans have absolutely no intention whatsoever of having anything to do with.
That they're going to Jason it to death.
Get the hockey mask again.
Yeah, I mean, it's... There you go. I think Barbara Bush is Jason's mother, but gone.
No, well, I think George is Jason.
Touche.
Kathy out in Kingman, Arizona, just wrote in with regard to what you offered, David.
Yeah.
She said the only good thing about a depression is if it gets the Republican and independent middle class out of their houses and behind shopping carts. When they've been homeless for several years, then they'll vote in a Democratic majority in Congress. That was the only way FDR could pass his programs. That is the only way the baggers even begin to see the light. The Liberty League was the bagger group that fought Roosevelt. And she is historically correct. The only problem is, I guess, my cynicism wonders that even if the teabaggers were out there shoving shopping carts and sleeping in refrigerator boxes, they'd probably pin American flags to it and blame it on that socialist Obama. I mean, Jesus Christ, did you hear the latest line from that addle-pated freak in South Carolina, David?
I did not.
Jim Demented?
No.
He said Barack Obama is a venture socialist. What the... does Man, that even mean?
Is he talking to Frank Luntz or what? That's diabolical.
A venture socialist. And today, Rick Hang'em High Perry said that Mitt Romney's individual mandate in Massachusetts was socialism. And, you know, maybe just like I said with, like, the reporter in Texas that we don't have, maybe that's where the... We are incapable of having, and that's the part that scares me, we are incapable of having, David, some journalists step up and really dress down one of these freaks real good. This country is aching for its, at long last, sir, have you no shame moment. You know, that moment that broke McCarthy.
Right.
I don't know if we're capable of having one of those anymore. But we desperately need one. I mean, we need a journal. You know, when Jim Demented made that venture socialist remark, we needed some journalist to say, what the f*** does that even mean, you goober?
Just string some words together. And
it's word salad.
Right. Yeah, word salad has become the American way. You can say anything now. Bippity boppity boo, boogity boogity amen.
Boogity 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 amen.
And all of a sudden, you're a guru. You said what the world needs to hear. I mean, look at what Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, all of the pundits on Fox can get away with saying. And nobody questions them. Like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, like, yeah, sure. Michelle Bachmann is now backpedaling for all she's worth on her HPV inoculation causes retardation. You know, she put a punch right into Rick Perry's solar plexus with that the other night and had the teabaggers all just hooting in the trees. But then she, well, they started calling, well, who said that to you? You know, because, well, I know this lady, and this lady said to me that her daughter got that shot against her will down in Texas, and now her daughter's mentally retardated. Oh, yeah? Who was it? See, it's easy to do that kind of journalism on a dipshit like Michelle Bachmann. But to stand up to these phony machismo, you know, the Perrys and the Demented's and the Coburns and that's not so easy. My God, I'll shoot your ass. No. So, you know, now she's, well, you know, it was just after the debate, and this lady came up, and she thanked me, and she said, thank you so much for talking it, because my daughter didn't want her to have that shot. We're from Texas, and she had that shot, and now she's mentally retarded. And I don't know who she is.
Well, I'll tell you something. We just have to continue pushing progressive ideas as forceful as we can, because it's obviously not going to be done with a light tap like so many moderate people are suggesting. You know, I watched a great interview with Tavis Smiley. Someone was taken to task about being an Obama critic, and he said, stop right there. He goes, I don't consider myself an Obama critic. He goes, I criticize every administration that comes into power. He goes, I see that as part of my job. I'm an advocate in that sense. And she was completely stunned. And that's the point. The point is that's people shouldn't be called critics because they come out and they give their opinion on one particular president. If at the same time they were doing the same, they were giving their opinion on a different political party. And this is the problem we have. We look at that and we see that as, oh my God, I can't believe you're bashing this person. And it does no good. It really.
Well, I'm sorry. I refuse to believe that just having a D behind your name suddenly immunizes you from being criticized for screw-ups. It's like this story that came out today about the grumblings in the halls of Congress about Bill Daley, the new chief of staff, or newish chief of staff. And people right. saying they miss Rahm because Rahm was engaged with Congress.
Yeah, Rahm.
Well, I know. I mean, there was kind of about that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, a couple of days before that, the big essay comes out. I'm sure you saw this from James Carville.
Mm-hmm.
The title, What Should the White House Do? Panic? And old Snakehead. Yeah. That's what his wife calls him. Old Serpent Head, that's what it is.
I don't need visuals, but go ahead.
Well, that's okay. He calls her Daughter of Satan.
Okay.
Only because she is, you know, Mary Madeline. But he advocates, he says, tells Obama, fire somebody. Fire a lot of people. And he says, indict people. And he says, make a case like a Democrat. And quit letting policy wonks make your points for you. And Carville, we're not going to have the, you know, I hate Bill Clinton conversation here.
Right.
But Carville is a smart man. And deserves to have his ideas at least considered, if not put into practice. But I found it kind of interesting that thing came out a couple of days ago, and then today we see the story coming out about grumblings about Bill Daley, because Bill Daley is apparently spending all of his time cozying up to Republicans, which would explain a lot.
It does explain a lot. You know, politics is such a dirty business. And did you hear? Speaking of dirty, did you hear that in Germany they put up a poster of Obama in blackface?
Oh God, no.
I looked at that, and I was just like, that was like a double facepalm moment. Wow.
Oh, haben Sie gehabt, hatten geworden sein. Jeebus. No, please.
But before I go, a funny story to close it off with.
All right.
In China, well, actually not funny, sort of painful, too. In China, there was this man, Bob, who went in for therapy for getting rid of dead skin with eels. Did you hear about this one?
No.
Well, apparently Zhang Han was really attached to this therapy. So he decided to go in, the spa treatment. He sat down, and the eels were doing their business, Bob. They were doing their business on his dead skin. And all of a sudden, one lone rogue eel.
Oh, no, no.
What is this going? Yes, Bob. This
just
is
eeled right up and...
No, no, Bob. I didn't want to tell you what actually happened because then the suspense builds. It's like a murderous Stephen King on mushrooms. And suddenly the eel decides, wait a minute, I don't want to eat the dead skin. I want to go for that center hole right there.
No, stop.
And the eel, yes, ladies and gentlemen, here's the thing about eels. Judging by their size, the fact that they are slippery and slimy, it creates kind of like a lubricant, so they can pretty much go anywhere they want.
Okay, and that's enough. Stop. That's enough. There are people having dinner right now.
Anyways, the eel, what ended up happening was the guy was in a really eely, really painful situation, and they had to pull...
Well, at least Richard Gere's getting some relief.
Well, yeah, I mean, but poor...
Gerbil. Screw Gerbil. Well, don't.
Well, it's a good thing this guy isn't a celebrity. He would never live it down. Is it, hey?
But now he may be a celebrity.
Well, he may be. I think, someone like that may want to change his name. I don't know, though.
Oh, but, Jesus. Where do you find these things? And by the way, since we've moved over to pop culture,
yeah.
I did a little digging around, and I guess, those science fiction novels that Reverbo put us on to by Richard yeah. K. Morgan, the Takeshi Kovacs series that begins with Altered Carbon,
mm-hmm.
They were all optioned by Joel...
Oh, God, not that guy. Schumacher?
The guy who did The Matrix?
Oh, yes. I know what you guys are talking about.
So, yeah. Coming to a theater near you, I just started a new one by him called The Market Forces. You know, those three novels that I mentioned, they're set 500 years in the future. This one is set 35 years in the future. Because I ran across, we talk about double dip recessions and nobody knows what causes it because nobody's ever really seen one. You know, it's like that elusive woodpecker in the bayous of Arkansas or whatever. But this guy's really sharp with a handful of words, and he created a phrase in there, and he's talking about the past that leads up to the future that he's writing, or the present that he's writing in, which is in fact the future.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes the years of the domino recessions, where one comes right after another, right, like dominoes, just. Domino theory for economics as opposed to, the spread of communism or something. And I thought, wow, domino recessions, that might get a little traction somewhere down the road.
Well, Bob, I haven't read the books, but one thing I am praying for is the fact that Keanu Reeves does not star in any of these Richard K. Morgan,
No.
No. But I just wanted to say I hope you have a really eely wonderful weekend.
Oh, work it, David. Work it. You too, brother.
All right, Bob.
Bye now. Eely. Oh, come on, David. That was our pop culture correspondent, David from Maine.
Bob.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Fine and dandy. I just want to say a little bit about, you were talking about Roosevelt, I guess you were talking about the fireside chat.
Mm-hmm.
Those things, like, I always heard my folks talking about those, and it gave them such encouragement, you know?
Well, they
people would actually sit around the radio and listen.
And I heard the same thing from my parents. who were, you know, teenagers at the time, or children, actually, but that people were reassured by it.
Yeah.
Because they felt like that Roosevelt had a stake in it just like they did. Now, the guy was filthy rich, but he had, I guess what you would say, the common touch.
Well, it's kind of like Kennedy, you know.
Yeah.
There are people like that, you know.
And calling people to the greatness that resides in them.
Yeah. And it's like I said, you know, if things didn't get better, like big better, they got better. But he gave them hope. And I think that's what has happened with Obama. Right now, it looks like he's going to go fighting for people, but we've been let down so many times. So you just can't trust that he will...
And the sad thing is, he's run out of time. You know, the election's not tomorrow or anything, but Juanita, he's run out of time. It is almost mathematically, physically, scientifically impossible to turn the economy around in the amount of time that he has remaining to him. And there is no way. And, you know, the Republicans have admitted this. There's no way that they're going to let him have this. They're not going to get on board with his jobs program because they've admitted, they said, then we have part ownership in it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we stay away from it, then he's got something to run on, but the problem remains entirely his because that's the way it's being sold to the American people. But the fact of the matter is, and I just saw an email with this calculation in it, Juanita, the Republicans have had control. They've had the majority in the House of Representatives for 255 days now.
Oh, yeah.
And they have not introduced a single, not one. Never mind anything that the president might do. They, on their own initiative, have not introduced a single, not one, bill pertaining to creating jobs and putting people back to work.
Absolutely not, no. And all that started out with, when they first got in, was a bunch of abortion bills.
And now they're worried about illegal aliens and their e-verified. You know, that freak Lamar Smith from Texas introduced this legislation to make e-verify the law of the land for every employer. Well, even the teabaggers and the Republicans are pushing, the normal Republicans are pushing, well, not normal, but you know what I mean. The other Republicans are pushing back on this. And that says something.
Well, talking about that, I was going to watch his speech. I've been watching the Republican debates and all. I feel like I want to be informed, so I know what kind of baloney they're throwing out, you know. But I was going to watch Boehner's talking about his job thing, and I blinked my eyes and he was through.
and I mean, some of this stuff is just inexplicable. I heard mentioned that David M.C. Rove Gregory's only guest on Meet the Press this Sunday, he's giving the whole hour to, oh, I don't know, how about an economic policy advisor for the president to talk about the jobs bill? No. How about the vice president? No. Secretary of Commerce? No. No, the entire hour is going to be given over to chinless Mitch McConnell.
Oh, God.
Now, Juanita, what in the world? What in the world does that man have to offer this nation? What information does he have that would be of any value whatsoever? And you and I both know the answer.
They came and they say kept a lot Boehner. He kept saying Boehner, Boehner, whatever, FIFO fan. he kept saying, you know, before they got the majority, Where's the job? Where's the job? And then after they got in and got in charge, he said, well, it was up to the president. Okay, well, now he gives them a plan, and he doesn't, you know, he didn't have any business doing that. You know, can't win for losing.
No. And they're silent as the grave on jobs. Because it's all about not America, not the economy, Juanita, not anything that actually matters to working people in this country. Oh, heck no. It's all entirely about one thing. And my buddy Dennis from Kentucky has had a little signature on his emails for the last few days that sort of grabs me. It's a little banner that says, the Republican Party keeping millions out of a job to put one man out of a job. And that's where they are. That's where they live. Exactly what they're about.
That's right. Yeah.
They would burn this entire country to the ground.
Sure.
Just to try to make sure that one isn't in their White House anymore.
Right. Well, you heard what they call us now, slackers.
Oh, are we slackers now?
Nation of slackers.
And why is that? Because we don't want to work for free?
Well, because they have all these jobs that Americans don't want, and we have to bring in these aliens to take these jobs, and they need to get off their duff and take these jobs. Well, offer the jobs. Do you remember when McCain was running and he was telling people, you know, that nobody would do those jobs, you know, the picking the fruit and stuff like that? That we had to have people come in to do it?
No, yes.
And a lot of them said, a lot of people in the audience said, we'll do it. We'll do that. And he said, oh, you know, that's hard work. You can't do that. And they said, yes, we can. He said, I could pay you $50 an hour, and you wouldn't be able.
You know what? You remind me of something. I got a clip here to play for you. This goes back to the heady days of George W. Bush. This was an appearance that he made in Cleveland. You'll probably remember it, Juanita.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, you got to help me find people that will pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know.
Pluck them. Yeah, that's America's problem, yeah. Americans
but
just...
They're going to a whole schmear about all of this. About, now, you know, granted, a lot of people, maybe young people, I don't know, think that this is not jobs for the American people. But I know people that they'll go up north and work in apples or whatever, you know. They like that kind of work. I always liked working outside, but I just didn't have the right complexion, you know.
In other words, you're like me and you burn under a refrigerator light bulb?
Yeah. But I mean, I resented it for years, you know, that I could. But I finally made peace because I love it. I love to get out. And I know a lot of people do. And it is hard work, but there's other work that's hard, too. And they're making everything hard. Isn't that the one where he sounds drunk?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of them where... Yeah.
Well, I mean, that...
Well, I drunked him up a little bit. I monkeyed with that audio. I made him sound a little drunker than he was, but...
Okay.
No, but he had a lot of loaded moments in those 8 years. I remember him well.
But we're slackers, and you I guess you heard about that. People applauding about the guy, let the guy die if he was too sorry to buy in.
Right.
Did you hear what Mr. Newt said later?
No.
Well, if he didn't have the grace to, not the grace, the prudence to supply himself with insurance, then we would have to take care of him, but it's not right, you know. Well, you can't just get insurance because you want to. I mean, not unless you want to pay a big fortune for it. I mean, they are so sorry. I mean, there's no redeeming factor to them, to my mind.
Well, again, everything that they offer, Juanita, is by way of an excuse for why... it's all an excuse to cover up what they're really about. And what they're really about is trying to get rid of that one out of the White House.
Yeah. Well, you know...
It's a White House for white people.
They made fun of his bill that... He said he didn't even have it in a proper container.
Oh, I know. The hissy over the binder clips.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Just go on and on and on about something like that.
Well, that's probably because he's a socialist tree hugger and didn't want to have a proper clear plastic binder like a real American would, instead of what those Kenyan Muslim socialists do.
And
makes you want to scream, doesn't it?
Yeah. Something else I was going to tell you is a couple of times somebody's been calling in to the Journal, Washington Journal.
Mm-hmm. C-SPAN.
Mountaintop Removable.
Have they really?
Yeah, asking them to have a program on it. And, yeah, it sounds like the same guy, but it... He's really good.
Well, you'll have to write his name down and email it to me next time if you
hear. You know, when they call in, they just have the first name. And
well, but even a first name would clue me.
Okay.
I'll bet you I could figure it out pretty quick. But that's smart. That's good.
Yeah, he's asking them to have programs on it. And that's the second time I heard him. I don't see it every day, but I heard it. Yesterday, I think, was one time, and then about a week ago.
I'll be darned.
And why won't they?
They probably think it's not that important. No, seriously. I remember when Al Franken's office said that mountaintop removal was just a regional issue.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's Steve King from Steve King from Iowa. Just getting a little heads up here. Steve King of Iowa, that crazy freak. Yeah, unemployment insurance has created a nation of slackers.
Oh, by that way, the one that called us slackers was a nation of slackers was.
Steve King.
Gomer.
No, Steve King. I've got the audio. I've got the audio right here. Unless they're passing notes in the house, which is entirely possible.
Yeah, it's hard to tell them apart. Oh boy.
Yeah, he said the 80 million Americans that are of working age but are simply not in the workforce need to be put to work. We can't have a nation of slackers and then have me have to sit in the Judiciary Committee listening to them argue that there's work Americans won't do.
Yeah.
And then borrow money to pay the welfare for people that won't work.
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess he's advocating, work camps maybe? Arbeit macht frei much, Steve King?
How about concentration camps? That's the best.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
That would suit him better.
you know, if you want slackers, I'd say 255 days on the job without introducing a single jobs bill probably constitutes slacking just a little bit, wouldn't you?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they had showed something about Bonner was talking about he was raised to work in the bars, you know, because of his grandfather and his daddy. And he said, that's where I learned to handle people. That's why I can handle this job. And then he was saying that him and Obama must be living on different planets because they...
Yeah, well, you know, maybe... Yeah, because, you know, maybe Obama's from Vulcan and Boner is definitely from Uranus.
I'm beginning to wonder if some of these people ain't from some other breed.
Well, they're from the lizard planet.
And you know, I kind of hate, I got to where I like lizards. I used to be afraid of them.
Well, I know, yeah, that probably was a little unfair to the lizards.
You know, because...
No, yeah, some of them are cute. The little newts and skinks and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, I wanted to say that a little bit. Say a little bit about how down to earth the Roosevelts were. Both of them. And they had their unique way. You know, she went to the coal mines. She would go down into the coal mines. They showed her going down in the elevator. You ever seen that?
Oh, Eleanor Roosevelt, she wasn't going to take anything from anybody.
No. And she was always having her life threatened because, you know, she stood up for black people way back then. And she went out, her and I guess her secretary, they went out and drove all over the South and the West. And she had her little pistol. They drove in their little T-model Ford. And she had her little pistol for protection. She never had to use it, but...
No, that was a different America.
When the royalty, you know, the King and Queen of England came over here, Eleanor took them out on a picnic. That was the big, they had hot dogs.
Oh.
That was the big dinner, you know.
Your Majesty, would you like some relish with that? Yeah. Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful weekend, dear. It's good to hear from you.
Take care.
All right.
Night-night.
Bye now. Juanita calling from Florida. Just a wonderful soul. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, how are you, buddy?
It's getting cold over here.
Is it really? But, it's coming along now?
Oh, yeah, already. It's about 50. So all those days, maybe a day of 70, maybe. Or we might just keep going to zero. But, you know, the cold isn't so bad.
That's what the brandy's for, right?
Exactly. And I'll tell you, it's not that...
Didn't you tell me that Wisconsin is the brandy consumption capital of America?
Yeah, this little tiny state consumes a quarter of all the Korbel that's bottled. So, that's...
Wow.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot.
Is straw optional or what?
I don't know. It is amazing. But what's really... Bob, I'm tired of this cannibal nation. The cannibalism is just rampant.
Cannibals or zombies?
You know, it's just cannibals. No, these are cannibals. These are white, buttoned-down, crazed Oxford-wearing, you know, just straight-up cannibals. And they're lauded by the people that are eating them. You know, what I heard at that Tea Party rally, I've been busy all week, but... I heard that, my brain shut down. It's still my, you know. Yeah, it's like getting a photon torpedo up the rear end. They're laughing, cheering on about letting somebody die because they don't have health insurance. in a country where...
And then it turned out it wasn't even a hypothetical. It was Ron Paul's campaign manager.
For real freedom, huh?
Yeah.
Freedom, huh, Bob?
Yep, just another word for nothing left to lose.
Jeez. Oh, my God. It's just, you know, they want to put us to work for free, or whatever the hell this is he's talking about. He wants to put us to work. Yeah, we're a nation of slackers, huh? Well, where are the solar panels? Why don't we have a job worth doing? Why don't you give us a... Isn't that what they're supposed to be doing out there? It's making jobs worth doing? Instead of sitting there, you know, well, I mean, granted, you know, now Citizens United, them lobbyists are real busy. You know, it's a problem.
Yeah, those are some workers now, those K Street lobbyists. They're working.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, garbage bags full of money and everything else they're doing. I mean, that's why to hear anybody in our economic class even attempt to support these people, it's just so outrageous. It's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know what the FBI is doing here in Wisconsin, but I hear that our governor might be getting a visit.
Yeah, they've been knocking on some doors. Turns out one of his aides, back before he was elected governor, one of his aides was spending all of her time that she was supposed to be dedicating to helping Wisconsinians do this or that or the other thing. She was using the entirety of her time politicking for Scott Walker. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah. The latest word from Scott Walker's office is, "I know nothing. I see nothing."
I am shocked to find gambling going on in this place.
Exactly. You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, everybody out.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one that happens to, where you just get so damn flummoxed that the words are right down there around your voice box and they're all knotted up and they just won't get the rest of the way out.
Well, that's because there's a whole lot of F's and, you know, words that start with F and MF and everything else. I mean, it's just so outrageous. It's outrageous. It's outrageous beyond measure. You can't even measure the audacity of these people. I mean, the mask is so off. It is so scary. And it's even, you know, the mask is off. I want to see, you know what? All right, David, I agree with a lot of things you say, but no, I want an angry black man. If you recall, years ago, I want a big black woman with just pissed with a paddle in her hand. That's what I want. I want that, and they need to go in there and start whacking heads. That's what I want to see. Why? A black lesbian woman? Yeah, president. Put her in. Because I want to see some outrage. How can you not be outraged? How can you not be mad? I mean, I don't know. Are we facing extinction, or is that just a word? Because to me, we're facing extinction.
That's a good word.
That's where we're going. Where else are we going? Who's planning for... I mean, they ignore the word. So that tells me then that's where we're going, isn't it? You know? Mom, Dad, where are we going? To the movies? No.
Well, there is some good news.
The movies.
Can I drop some good news on you?
I don't know. Can I take it? My heart? I don't know.
I think you'll... Because this is the kind of statistic or this is the kind of number, the kind of news that makes you think that maybe just somewhere out there in a box of Cracker Jacks somewhere, there might be hope, for that train that Verbo keeps talking about and you keep talking about and I keep talking about. From a website called Inside Climate News, some 15%, now I know it's a tiny number, some 15% of U.S. voters now see global warming as their main concern, meaning it could be an important issue in next year's election, says analyst. Now, the reason this matters is that the percentage of Americans who believe the Earth has been warming rose to 83% from 75% last year, 75% last year, 83% this year, in a poll that was just now conducted. So this means, what that basically means, I think, Albert, is the more that the Michelle Bachmans and the Rick Perrys talk about their faith-based climate, and the more that Rick Perry prays for rain and his plant and his state instead burns up in response, that there are, I mean, 83% of Americans believe the Earth has been warming. When was the last time, but last year, Albert, it was 75%. When was the last time, you know, not Radio Rwanda, screw them.
Yeah.
But when was the last time that MSNBC or any of the others told you 75% of the people in the United States believe the planet is warming? Sorry, not yelling at you.
No, I don't know. I'm not yelling at you.
But, I mean, that's kind of important, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole lot more people that than believe that they were picked up outside Pascagoula, Mississippi by aliens and anal probed.
Slightly.
Which is the same number as the number of teabaggers in America.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. They're so vocal, they think they're a majority.
Yeah, they think... Right, because, you know, my little raising of my voice notwithstanding... Screaming is not content.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, shut up. We see more of them than they see of them. I mean, no wonder they don't see any other point of view. All they get to see is themselves. All we get to see, basically, is themselves. That's all we get to see is them. That's all you ever hear. They're the only ones that make any friggin' news. When their news is laughed at, I mean, I'm not trying to, none of that shit flies with me. I mean, I'm not, I try to be open. Well, all right, what are they going to say? Oh, Jesus. Oh, again, they got me with the, you know, the horrible picture. Every time. It never stops, and it's worse and worse and worse every day. Every day, these people just are crazier and crazier. So who the hell's listening to them? And why are you covering them so much? That's my biggest thing. You guys should say these people are stupid, because they are. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. They're stupid. It's quantifiable. You can, they're freaking retarded. And I hate to say, I know, we're not supposed to say retarded. They're retarded. That's retarded. You're not someone born like that. Those people. That. They should know better. But no. They know, no. We're going to listen to them. I don't understand it. I don't comprehend it other than the fact that the people who want them, oh, we should all comprehend it. The people with money, that's the point of view they want push out, and that's what we get. You know, these people, you know, like you were talking about current TV. God, I'd love to see you on current TV, and boy, they could really use you, Bob. They need content. You know, I love a documentary. Don't get me wrong. I watch documentaries nonstop, but I can only watch the same one so many times.
Can you imagine 3 hours of these conversations going out over something like that? I mean, you just sort of, well, you know, you're like Bill Hicks, just, you know, just sowing seeds. No, I mean, yeah, that would be amazing.
Like a C-SPAN that people call in, like a C-SPAN that people, yeah, that would be beautiful. You know, that would be a beautiful thing.
And get it out of the studio and be, you know, walking around, pointing at the sky and, you know, not all, you know, just break, you know, just take a sledgehammer and shatter the fourth wall.
Because, yeah, I mean, well, that's, yeah, the fourth branch, huh? The media. And you're right, when are they going to take these people to task? When?
Let me throw a little cold water along your, those statistics we were talking about a minute ago, Albert. This is telling, okay? I mean, this is really important because, you know, it's 83%, right? Believe that the planet is warming. Well, that's not the end of the statistics, though. You know, there's lies, damned lies, and statistics, I guess they say. 71% of that 83%, 71% of the Americans who believe warming is happening think that it's caused either partly or mostly by humans. Huh? Really? 71%? And then how did these clowns get into office, in these teabag and goober? How did...
Yeah.
Because, you know why?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because we stay home, that's why.
Because we stay home. I got it, and I got one that... But wait, there's more. It's another one of those damn Ginsu commercials, Albert. The other fun part is that the people who don't believe in global warming... The so-called skeptics, the non-believers, the deniers. I don't like non-believers. The deniers. The people who think that science doesn't work in their world, that, you know, well, you know, we have to boil our water to 472 degrees Fahrenheit to get it to go. Our water freezes at 12. Those people, on the other hand, you know, Jesus will cool our planet with his loving cooling rays. Those people, they're entrenching, Albert. They're entrenching. Because they went from being 35% to 53% in 2011. I mean, they're digging in. Now, what you just said a minute ago, because we don't vote? One of my favorite writers over at Crooks and Liars is Caroli. And she's just amazing. She and Susie Madrak, you know, they're Beatles to me. They're Elvis. Well, she's got a post from yesterday. Headline, Democracy in Action. 13% of Hollywood, Florida voters strip union workers of negotiated pensions and health plans. Okay, this is the pull quote that Caroli grabbed from the Miami Herald. With a low voter turnout, about 13% of the city's 84,521 registered voters. So that's 8,452 plus, okay, so about, yeah, 13,000 voters. Oh, I'm getting a pronunciation correction. I'm supposed to call Caroli Carolee. Says it rhymes with merrily, or so she told. Okay. Carolee. Merrily. Carolee. Okay. Thank you, Betsy. Betsy's looks out for my pronunciation well-being. Carolee. I like that better, really. But no, 13,000 people voted, and the majority said that public servants can't have negotiated pensions and health plans. So that's 13% voted. So 13% divided by 2 is 6.5%. So roughly, and I don't know, maybe it was more, but no less than 6.51% of the eligible voters in Hollywood, Florida, put the screws to firefighters, police, and other city employees.
Mm-hmm.
Where were the people who like to have their fires put out, Albert?
Mm.
Where were the people who like for the police to keep the muggings from happening?
Well, Brother Bob, they may have very well been like a lot of people in the state of Wisconsin have been when they had their new Voter ID Act enabled or enacted. In that, but it said maybe everybody who wanted to vote needed a state-issued voter ID. And then they'd say how much it cost. But what they failed to mention is that you could go to the DMV and ask for the free ID, and they'd have to give it to you. But in all ways, they were instructed to never mention the free ID until the person asked for it. But they never put that information out to say that people had to ask for the free ID. So, you know, who knows, you know. They never really advertised vote, you know, voting day. When do you see it advertised? I mean, I'm even here. You see where I live. Every once in a while, you know, oh, that's right. You know, now I happen to not miss it because I pay attention too much, but I can see how it's easy for people to miss. It's too easy for them to miss. I'd love to see, you know, I don't give a shit. I'd love to see mandatory voting. Mandatory.
I think you've invented another bumper sticker. Voting, or I vote because I pay attention too much. Or I'm no teabagger because I pay attention too much.
Yeah. Shit, you only got to pay attention a little bit not to be one of them idiots. But, you know, but for real, like, I'd love to see, I mean, this is the information age, you know, and the nice thing is, you know, there is hope. You know me. I got hope for the future. I do. I really do think that we're going to start to hit the nails on the head and, you know, maybe dust off some old books that people have forgotten and, you know, start to kind of really get some innovations going that we really desperately need. You know, I mean, and you know, honestly, it doesn't really help what happened with that Solaris shit. That pisses me off. I don't understand, you know, what that's all about. And for me, you know, the Republicans, they love to, no matter what, you know, Enron comes along, oh, they, you know, they, You know, they soften their gloves with them. Not me. I'd like to beat the hell out of these guys for where they run some scam with their thin film or whatever the hell else like that. Because it's like running an orphanage and then a butcher shop out the back where you sell the little kids that you take in. When you take a solar company like that and then destroy it. And then it puts a black eye on the entire... I mean, we don't need any more black eyes. We've just been through 30 years since Reagan when he tore the panels off the roof. And that was just for hot water heaters. People to this very day think, oh, the technology's not here yet. Oh, no, no, we can't do it. So anytime it gets a black eye like that, my God, you know who comes out in me? That just is outrageous to me. That really pisses me off. I hope people can start, you know, look past that and understand how important this issue is, that us becoming energy, you know, energy independent, individually, to have energy liberty. You know, that's what we need in this country. That's the kinds of things, you know, our economy, shmonomy. You know, screw the economy. What the hell is that? That's not going to, just like with the trees, this shit ain't going to mean anything if we ain't here. And if we keep, you know, pulling off the tar sands and blowing up the mountains and, you know, spending, you know, I love to see this shit too. This is another one that just drives me nuts. How much did we spend in Iraq and Afghanistan? Because I'm pretty sure it's in the $3 trillion range.
Thereabouts.
Every time, yeah. And every time, but every time I see the, you know, like the New York Times and they show, I mean, honestly, at least they're showing the graphs of who, which president's more responsible for the spending than the other one, right? You see Bush, you know, and they put in, his is massively huger than Obama's. Obama's is little penny slits. You know, and plus there's some income coming in on the top. But they always put Bush's, the war is like $1.5 trillion. That's a bargain. I thought we hit $1.5 trillion when he was still, you know, right in the beginning of his first term. I mean, what are you talking about, $1.5 trillion? Well, that's $3 trillion. Last time I heard, now they're going to build more to the embassy, which is already the largest building in the frickin' planet, or largest embassy in the world. They're going to make it so we can fit double the troops there. You know, so, you know, we're never getting that.
But you know what? Whoever winds up getting that embassy is going to get a fine embassy once we finally get run out.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the
Chinese.
Nomads. Well, you know, the nomads. You know, the last scragglers of human civilization wandering the desert planet. You know, finding cans of dog food and rejoicing and throwing a celebration. That's what it's going to be. Eating sand scorpions and everything else. Those places will be worthless other than some shelter and then sandstorms. You know, and then those people will die and then humans will pass from this universe and maybe it can go on. I don't know. But, you know, if we don't get our ass in gear, you know, I mean, I want to see Obama mad. That's what I want. I paid to see that. We just lived through 8 years of Bush. I want you to go in there and kick ass.
Yeah.
Not lay on your back and spread eagle and grab your ankles. That's not what I want to know. That's not what we paid for. We don't have time for that. Maybe after, but not now. Right now, you have to kick ass hard and again and again and again and again and again and again. Yeah, who's Daly? Who's that guy? I don't know who that guy is. Get him out of there. Get fire, fire, fire. Get rid of these people. Angry black man. We need an angry somebody. We just need somebody with some backbone. And what is this jobs bill? I'm not impressed with it. I don't give a shit. I'm not impressed. It's not. It's half-assed. It's a, we'll just do this. Put some more roads up. Well, we're going into winter now. So what the hell roads? What jobs? We don't need this kind of crap. This little nilly. You know, it's time to go to war. Oh, everybody's sending, you know, top-end cruise missiles and spaceship deployment teams and everything else they've freaking developed for trillions of dollars. Oh, it's jobs. Oh, well, here's $100 million. You know, have fun. It's like, what are we doing? Making deer trails? I got a nice bike trail to Viroqua over here. Big deal.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, you mentioned bike trails. You do know the Republican had a hissy over them the other day, right?
Oh, of course they do. Of course they always do. Oh, it's this land I could use to grow some corn.
It's a threat to national security. Or I don't know, security.
Yeah, well, little fear minds, they, you know, they're always afraid. They're afraid of everything except what they should be afraid of. You know, they're afraid of everything. Oh, the liberals, socialism. You know, it's like, how stupid do you have to be to not be able to look at the most successful species on this planet and work together, they'll work with species outside their own species. Look at that. I mean, look at how much we could learn from just a little simple ant. You know, or the bee. You know, now I'm not saying that people should be drones and it should be 1984 dystopia and people should work for the party or anything bullshit like that. You know better than that. I'm saying we need to work with the system that we live in.
No, or perhaps work with an understanding that if you kill off a lot of the hive, you kill off or you kill off some of the hive, you may very well kill off the whole hive. I mean, look at the colony collapse disorder. You know, they never really did nail it down all the way. Part of it was the fact that they were working the damn bees to death. Get out of there! Get out of the hive, you little slackers!
Yep.
You know, because they'd turn them loose in the almond groves in California, and then once they were done there, they'd pack them up and go to Texas. And then they'd pack them up and go to Florida. And the poor little things never got to go through an actual season because hives have to go dormant for a while. And, you know, after a while, they just said, screw it, and flew away. I don't have to put up with this crap. I'll go make a hive in a tree somewhere. But, no, I mean, there are these little hopeful moments, Albert. I mean, you know, Jerry Falwell University, right? Crazy people. Well, after the whole Ron Paul teabagging, hang 'em high, let 'em die on the floor of the church thing, somebody had the wise idea at Think Progress of running off down to Lynchburg, Virginia. And they interviewed students at Liberty University. Jerry Falwell, Liberty University. And they didn't, and everyone they talked to, every single one of them said it is unchristian just to allow somebody to die because they're uninsured.
What did you just say?
They said every one of these students they talked to said it is unchristian to simply allow a person to die because they're uninsured.
What? Christians said that?
Yeah. Not just Christians, literalist, you know, don't wear polyester, Dacron, cotton blend slacks because you'll get stoned to death. Old Testament literalist fundamentalist Christians said that.
Oh, but that's just the hopeful youth. They don't really know Jesus like I know Jesus. That's what that shit is. Yeah, that's them being, yeah, they're going through their stage. They're so rebellious, aren't they?
Jesus hates all of the sick folks, all of the sick folks in the world. I mean, no, these crazy bastards. This stuff I haven't touched, but it's Friday, Albert, so why not? Can't seem to introduce a jobs bill Republicans. They had them a hearing in the House of Representatives the other day.
Oh, word.
South Carolina's in the House. They had him. No, sit down. We may be drinking by the time we're done with this.
Bob, I was ready. It's time. I can't take it anymore.
These dweebs, these neo-maxi Zoom dweebies in the Republican Party spent taxpayer money. You know, yours and mine, ours. To have a hearing in which they brought in a snake breeder. No shit. They brought in a snake breeder to testify under oath before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee about how a rule that designates the Burmese python and eight other snake species as injurious and makes it illegal to import them or transport them across state lines. Well, it's going to devastate a small but thriving sector of the private sector economy. They got testimony to that effect, Albert. Shut my mouth. They did.
You know why that's so funny to me? Just on a personal level, besides the fact that, of course, they're not doing anything of any substance. I wish I could show you the guy. Back in my younger poor days, not to say I don't have all the poor days, but younger poor days, when, you know, you're forced to live in an apartment. I lived above a guy who, let's just say, Ricky from the Trailer Park Boys.
Okay.
And, I mean, for real. I mean, and then not even, I mean, everything, everything. It just is, perfect. Except he thought he spoke more Ebonics than anything. But anyway, that was his big thing when the internet came out. He was going to build a web page and all that kind of thing. You know, like with the tinkling, sparkling background and the MIDI music section.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was a Python breeder. Yeah, we gotta take care of those guys, because if you don't take care of the Python breeding section, then don't take this to offense, any of you herpetologists out there. But on my experience, they'll be entering your car looking for loose change.
Yeah,
that's what they do, huh? That's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing.
I mean, I don't know how I'm.
Like I said, no, you really want to drink now, don't you?
No, I'm. You know,
I know.
How do they breathe? How?
But you know, but it's that way from the bottom to the top. I mean, you've got Rick Perry saying, you know what we need to do? We need to leave Afghanistan, except for leaving Afghanistan. On the one hand, we need to leave Afghanistan, but on the other hand, we need to keep some troops in Afghanistan.
Yeah, they're idiots. They're so stupid. And it's like these are the people that bring you things like right to work.
Oh, yeah.
And that's right to work. It's been one of those, my mom happens to live in Idaho, where, you know, they have a bunch of backwards thinking people. And it's true, without doubt, it's true. Anybody will tell you. And on her property, there's another piece of property that borders, and it's a quarry farm. You know, the guys, he wants to make it a quarry. And he already sold the rights to a corporation. And now, you know, my mom's fighting it. You know, and she's like, oh, they call me a hippie. They call me this. They call me that. I told her to tell, you know, I'm like, you know, you look them in the eyes and you say, what do you care about trees and land for if you, there's nobody there? And I said, courtesy of Bob Kincaid. And, you know, because I'd like to change that too. I hear environmentalists now and I squirm. You know, it's what the hell environment. There's no point to it if we're not here to look at it. You know, and it should be a healthy environment, not a, you know, Blade Runner environment.
Right.
But, yeah. So I basically told him, I looked at it, and you know me, you're not going to fight it and win in Idaho. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. I mean, there's no way. There's as red gets over there. You know, that's the, I mean, she lives, what, 20 minutes from Ruby Ridge?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I told her, I'm like, well, you just better, either you're going to have to accept that they're going to drill 6 wells on their property, and they're going to run a quarry, and they're going to use explosives, and they're going to do everything that they want to do.
Is she on a well, or does she have public water?
She's on a well.
Yeah, well.
And Idaho, in the freedom-loving, we're pig-licking state of Idaho, they're putting a meter on it, and they're going to charge her for it in the future.
Jesus.
Like, so not only... Wait, stop it.
They're going to put a meter on her water well?
Oh, yeah, of course. There's no private property rights up there. That's how Republicans are. It's a bunch of bullshit. They don't talk none about it. That's just bullshit. You got a couple million dollars, all right, we'll let you go. You can get a KMA card. The rest of you, no, you ain't got squat. Yeah, they put a meter on it. They put a meter on it, and, you know, oh, we're not charging you yet. You know, we're not charging you now, but they will. That's how they work. Slowly but surely, they want what they want, and they'll scrunch and scrunch and scrunch until they get there, and then next thing you know, once they touch it, it's mine. And then they have it. You know? I mean, it's just how
it's all Daffy Duck all over it. Mine, mine, it's all mine.
Mine. Yeah.
I'm exactly. Socially secure. I'm comfortably well off.
Oh, I win. You know? Yeah, I win. That's why, you know, it's nice to hear. You know, I mean, I don't know. Are you going to hold your breath that the Liberty University graduates are going to believe that Jesus was some sort of socialist? I don't know. I'm not. You know, I mean, I was just, it's funny even bring it up because I was just talking about Jesus the other day.
You know, it's crazy, but I talk about him all the time. And not even meanly.
No, I like Jesus. I don't have a problem with Jesus. I'm like Gandhi. It's his followers that I can't stand. Because they don't listen. They don't understand. It's like, don't you know what, you know, renounce all your worldly possessions and follow me.
I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ.
Yeah. If someone slapped your head, I mean, you know, that's what I think it was something to do with 9/11. No, we got the Iraqis back for 9/11, someone said. People still say this crap. They still say this. They have the audacity to repeat something like that. Well, Iraq, you know, they're 9/11. That's how sad it is. Like, dude, what's wrong with you? What? Not only has that been disproven a billion times, it wasn't true ever to begin with. But that's what it is. That lie is just like...
Well, Al Qaeda was in Iraq. Yeah, some fried potatoes now. Some call it a sling blade. I call it a banana blade.
Yeah, it's a banana blade, all right. I'm telling you, bud. I mean, you know, but that's the thing. You know, they said, they don't listen to turn the other cheek. They don't listen to that.
No, that's no fun. Peace is hard work.
Yeah, peace is hard work. Doesn't, you know, and it doesn't make the lords, the barons, money. You know, the other thing that just blows me away is how people don't, you know, like they act like robber barons are a thing of the past. Now, how in the hell can a robber baron be a thing of the past when just last year some hedge fund schmuck, you know, some guy with his mouth made $4.9 billion and got taxed at 15% because it was capital gains tax? You can't expect me. It's capital gains. I could have lost it. He made $4.9 billion. And these are the people, the Michelle Bachmans, the Berry, you know, the Perrys and the Freaks and all these other Herman Cains and all these other these jackwads. They want to sit here and go back to the 50s. Right? That's how that's the paint.
Yeah, everything but the tax rates of the 50s.
But the tax, exactly. It's like, no, I'd love to go back to the 50s. Put them tax, you know, put that cap on American income. That's a sick thing. I think that is the sickest thing when somebody, I mean, it's like that woman that was 700 pounds and she wants to hit 2 tons. Who looks at that and says, she's in a sport. She's a good gainer. Yeah, look at her go. Oh, she's getting bigger and bigger by the second. Is that the kind of sport we want to see? No. So how can greed be the same thing? It's the same thing, isn't it? It's one of them sins, right?
Yeah, but even with those upper level tax rates, the funny thing is, Albert, Yale didn't go out of business. Harvard didn't go out of business. The Ivy League kept on being the Ivy League, and rich folks kept sending their kids there and paying tuition and making endowments and foundating and everything. And
Ford and Chevy went bankrupt, right? No? Oh, okay. Huh. Amazing.
Yeah, darndest thing.
Well, but Walmart wasn't around, really, was it? So, I mean, how good could it have been?
Well, I mean, you know, no, there wasn't a Walmart. There was a guy who made a living and put a couple of kids through college repairing televisions. And there was another guy who made a living and kept food on the family and put a couple of kids through college, who had a TV store downtown on Main Street.
Hmm.
And there was another guy, and he sold suits.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there was a department store that hadn't been gobbled up by Macy's or any of these others, that was actually a little, not a little, but a well-to-do family from the community that had a big concrete Art Deco store on the corner of Court Street and Mobile Street. And you could get anything you wanted there. And the folks who worked in the shoe department knew you by name.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in menswear knew your suit size when he saw you coming.
Mm-hmm. And because you had a union job, you could afford to shop there.
Yeah, you're a blue-collar worker, but by God, you look as good as the banker when you go to church on Sunday.
There you go. And I'll tell you, if we're ever going to get, I mean, you know, and there's things from the 50s that we certainly wouldn't want. And there's some things at the 50s that we probably should do again, like the tax rate. And there's some things, the 50s that we should, you know, just leave alone. And there are some things that are good about life. And there's some things about history and about, you know, these things of the past, these, you know, traditions that are very good, and we should, you know, mess with them.
Well, then back up a minute, Albert. Back up.
Yeah.
Mm. I think I just landed on something. I know why our betters hate, you know, for all of their wanting to go back to when, you know, folks wasn't so uppity and all of that. No, I know why they hate that. Because the guy who was a welder at the plant who could buy suits from the guy on Court Street and could look the banker in the eye on Sunday at church. The banker doesn't like being looked in the eye. And he doesn't like not being able to be obviously the banker, and for the welder to not be obviously the welder. You know, I can remember when people said, well, I don't want to dress up for church. Well, you know, for some, you know, dressing up for church, for all I goon on church, dressing up for church was something kind of nice. Because Mama put on her best, and you put on your best, and you slickety'd the boy's hair, and the daughter had a lovely little dress with crinolines and bullshit, and you know,
yeah.
And they looked just like. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't look like they weren't as good as the damn banker,
mm-hmm.
or the lawyer,
mm-hmm.
or any of those other Republican voters. And that shit had to go, Albert. It had to go.
So now
the banker can still wear his nice suit on Sunday. But you know what? They don't sell suits worth a damn at Walmart anymore. And that man on Court Street, he's out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't be taking my son to him the way my dad took me. And the family-owned department store on the corner of Court and Mobile is gone, baby. It is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who put the two kids through school fixing televisions, well, you can't fix a television anymore unless you send it back whence it came.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I mean, and I only say this, Albert, because I think it's very easy for us to sometimes look at the world we live in and not understand that it wasn't just a product of chaos theory in action. This was planned. Now, I'm not going to get all Alex Jonesy or anything.
But no, it has to be.
But there was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of these elements, you know, if it was the AME church, folks coming out of church at noon on Sunday looked every damn bit as good as the folks coming out of the Southern Baptist church. Okay? It was black and white. It was multicultural and multispectral through the earnings ladder. You know, I look at pictures, for instance. I mean, all of this really does tie together, unless you tell me that I'm just losing it, okay? There's a connectivity to all of this, Albert. I look at pictures of the civil rights movement, and I see people walking into fire hoses and attack dogs who are dressed like they just stepped out of Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm not gooning on anybody, but I've been to some protests in D.C., they don't look like that anymore.
Mm-mm.
And I'll tell you something. They need to. Because
mm-mm.
America pays attention, whether we know it or not, we pay attention to that kind of thing. Well, how dare they pick them people up off the sidewalk and take them off to jail? That ain't no damn hippie!
Well,
he's got a shirt and tie and a nice pair of trousers on.
I don't know, brother.
I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about on the couches in middle America.
No, I hear you. No, I absolutely hear you. However, I just don't want to be too contrarian on you, but, you know, there was that oil sands protests, and they were arresting everybody.
They were. And some people... there were some folks there with their ties and stuff on.
Yeah,
and those, and there were, you know, there were old folks there. There was an 84-year-old woman from Amherst, Massachusetts that I talked to. There was another woman from Minnesota who had an oxygen separator on her back so she could continue breathing because she had cancer, who was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there were young and there were old, and it was an amazing demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard not to notice that this was not the usual suspects. But there, you know, we don't wind up where we are by accident.
Mm-hmm.
It is by design. And it is an overarching thing where we are being put back in our place. It's what went on in Wisconsin, in Ohio. It's that damn stupid plebiscite where, 8,000 people told all those people in Hollywood, Florida, that they didn't deserve a goddamn pension? And every last bit of this is orchestrated as if there was somebody behind a music stand with a damn baton.
There is. There is. It's the artificial intelligence, immortal entity known as the corporation. And we are not going to be able to coexist on this planet with corporations in their current state of being. There's no way we could. The rules have changed. Citizens United proves that. All animals are equal, and some animals are more equal than others. They can start up a corporation. Rich people, these elites, can start a corporation and give Mitt Magic Underpants Romney $1 million and then close the corporation. And that's perfectly okay. You know, it doesn't matter how we dress now. Because pretty soon we'll be lucky to wear a barrel around us with a subservient. They don't even make barrels anymore. Oh, am I kidding?
No, that'll be a garbage bag, Albert.
That'll be a garbage bag, a hefty bag. Yeah, they make those, don't they?
Yeah, the Koch brothers do.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
See? It's good for them.
Goodness. Oh, Jesus. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
It is.
You better wake up, people. I'm telling you. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, we just can't. There's no way we can survive given them the power that they have. There's no way.
Well, that's the thing. We will not survive if we do.
Yeah.
Because, and again, I don't want to get all Alex Jonesy, but a time is coming where these people who hate government will get their way, and they will destroy the vast majority of anything good about the United States that actually does anything remotely good for the people thereof. It will be government of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations, if it isn't already.
Well, it was during the Bush years. You know, that's the thing, you know, we were calling it fascism back then, because it was. And, you know, yeah, President Not Sure is in there, and I wish he would have taken on his Idiocracy, you know. I wish he wouldn't have just taken the name so seriously. Hasn't he taken that name a little too seriously?
Yeah, no kidding.
Seen the movie. You know,
I was explaining the other night. That's not an insult. President Not Sure was the smartest man in America.
Yeah.
Well, come on, be the smartest man in America. You know, it's not that far of a stretch in terms of imagery. For those who haven't seen Idiocracy, you should. But no, we need a guy who will boldly and firmly step out and say, maybe we don't want to be watering the crops with salty beverages.
You're going to ruin the economy.
Yeah. Water, like, from the toilet?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what it's coming down to. It's coming down to, we're going to run out of burrito wrappings. You know? We're not going to have any more of that flattering. We don't have tubs of that anymore. I mean,
you will notice
on for their birthday. What am I going to do?
Right. Yeah.
Sorry.
But to extend, no, believe me. The first time Ferg saw an actual Fuddruckers, he was not okay. No, they really have those, Dad.
They're real.
It's real, you know. And there it was in Chinatown in D.C. Oh, can we go there? No. We don't have time for it. But to extend that metaphor just a little bit, remember, in that future society, 500 years out, they were about to starve to death and die of thirst.
Mm-hmm.
But what was still working? The cable was still on.
Oh, it was blaring. Yeah, it's 50 billion zillion channels. Dayton Network and everything else. Yeah, my balls network and everything. I mean, it's like, that's the thing. And that's the thing, you know, we said that
Monday night rehabilitation.
Yeah, Monday night. Oh, my goodness. It just doesn't stop. It just doesn't ever end. And people just keep doing it. And it's like, you know, and then they have the audacity to rail on Netflix over, couple bucks, it's like, man, if you got that much of a problem, you need to cancel your TV, because that'll free up at least 10 to 20 times what Netflix costs. What is the average bill for just straight up TV costs?
Oh, Jesus. What is it on average now? $75?
Yeah, $75, and that's if you don't get any.
And you know, there's another one. You know, there's another one of those moments on the way to the bar. You know, to the Mad Max world. It isn't being talked about enough because the fix is not in, and there won't be one. But and you know, no, it's not like people not get. Well, it kind of is like people not getting their Social Security checks. What happens on October 1st when the post office goes to hell? No, it's not the water company. It's not the power company. It's the damn post office. What happens?
I'll tell you exactly what happened. I know already. As a SNUS aficionado, I could tell you because I've seen it. It's happened. When they changed some rules with allowing the shipment of tobacco through the mail, and because they needed to have a signature of 21, the post office just doesn't have the manpower to do that, so they couldn't send via the U.S. Post anymore. Immediately, UPS doubled their rates. Overnight. Instantaneously. The minute they got a monopoly, they'll double their rates. So everybody wants to talk about, oh, we'll go to FedEx and, okay. You watch. You ain't gonna send no mail across. You're not gonna send no letter. And letters are nice. I'll tell you, it's funny. You know, that's the thing. You know, these people in the bubbles, you know, the media bubbles, they don't understand what's really going on down here. Now, Bob, I'm going to say something, and I'm sure that there'll be some people out there that are probably going to know exactly what I'm talking about. How many of you have a woman friend or are a woman who is knitting? I don't know about you, but over here there's tons of them. And lots of women want to learn how to knit. They just want to make a sweater. And it's actually a cool thing to know how to do. I know men that know that want to do knitting. People are starting to kind of get back to certain ways of being.
Right.
They don't like all this automated nonsense and all this other stuff. So, you know, when we talk about where are we going here, where are we going there, and these are the people driving the car. They don't even know where the passengers want to go. And I don't think, you know, I don't know. I don't think they're in tune. I really don't.
Look, if the post office goes to pot on October 1, Netflix kind of goes out of business.
Netflix does, and you can't even write it.
So where's the CEO of Netflix? You know, this is one of those moments when corporate power actually has some potential for good. You know, it's like what would happen if the Republicans actually did let, say, the food stamp program collapse. Because the phone would start ringing from Bentonville, Arkansas, to various Republican offices all over Capitol Hill, saying, "Boys, I understand you playing this little game and everything, but you just took a big bite out of Uncle Sam Walton's the monthly income. Now you fix this right quick. What do you say? Or you going to have a hell of a time, son? You're going to have a hell of a time. Well, Netflix needs to be doing that." Anybody who does business through the U.S. mail needs to be doing that.
It does, but then again, you know, you go to theyrule.net and see who's on the board. And if the people on the board are also on the board of FedEx, then that tells you pretty much everything you want to know. You know, I'm not being facetious. I'm no hyperbole when I tell you, when I said about corporations. They're the ones. That's the alien light. That's Skynet. They're the artificial intelligence. They're the ones that are saying that look, they're even admitting it. All the Madison Avenue marketing firms, they're not going to market to the middle class anymore. They're not going to market.
You're not going to market to something that doesn't exist.
Exactly. And what built the middle class, everyone? Social Security helped out, and so did union jobs, right? All these things, and now what is that? Now we got everybody, 8,000 people, you know, picking for the rest of everybody of what, you know, who's going to have union rights. And then, you know, Wisconsin, the same thing. It's like, and it's such an egregious, open face. I mean, the mask is off. It's such a violation. Things that, you know, I think way too many people took for granted. I don't know. I've had many discussions with people.
Albert, I guess this is going to make me sound a little bit mean and hateful, But I want those people who voted the police and firefighters and city workers in Hollywood, Florida, who voted away their pensions, I don't want them to sit there with their little secret ballot cowering in a corner going, yeah, I screwed them and they don't know it. I want them to stand up and own it. You know what? If you're a public worker in Wisconsin and you live next door to somebody who voted to make sure that you had less of a standard of living, I think the person who got screwed has the right to go knock next door, knock on the door, let Al Bundy come to the damn door and punch him in the face. Because you know what? It goes back to what Reverbo says about make it personal. How much more personal could it be for 6.51% of the eligible voters in a township, even if it's Hollywood, Florida, to take away your pension, your retirement, your health care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's a fix that's not so hard to do, Albert. Maybe we need to. Say that ballot initiatives are not results of ballot initiatives are not valid unless at least 70. Now this isn't mandatory voting, but the ballot initiative isn't valid unless at least 66%.
Yeah.
Of the eligible voters have voted.
Yeah. No.
Somebody's pension? Then by God, make it so that two out of three people you see on the street, you can look at them and say, "You did that to me."
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. No. That's a real good. that should be done. That should be done without question. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, you know, if you don't have such a percentage of the vote, how can you? You know, I don't think. I think votes should have to reach certain thresholds. You can't just, you know. You can't just pass these things in the middle of the night. You can't just sit there and have, you know, you don't get your voter ID card. Da, 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 da. You know, you never know. You never know sometimes with these votes. And how many people did I talk to? I didn't hear about it. I didn't know. You didn't vote today? Oh, I didn't get a time. Oh, you know, I didn't have time.
You really could. You could craft this legislation.
Yeah.
Any initiative which affects more than X number percentage of the population of whatever polity shall be null and void unless the people voting on said initiative are equal to or greater than two-thirds of the eligible registered voters.
Yeah, amen. That's a good idea. That should be done.
That didn't. Well, see, this is what happens in our conversations, Albert. I never thought of that before.
There you go.
This only happens because of the big round table that we've created here, brother.
Yes, indeed. I see it. I know what you're saying.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
well, I'm sorry it's getting colder up there, but at least you got things to keep you warm.
Indeed.
You take care and have a wonderful weekend, Brother Albert.
You too, sir.
All right.
I'll talk to you on Monday. You be good.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Gosh, I wish we had an audience of millions. If you got a bunch of people pushing that kind of a thing inside of state and local governments, the rat fucking that firefighters and policemen and city workers took in Hollywood, Florida, wouldn't happen. Or wouldn't happen without people being able to say, "You did it to me." And that you can deal with, one way or another. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, so David Brooks is learning us that, oh, you know, we're going to have to be prepared for, you know, a long bout of unemployment, you know, because, as he puts it, the Democrats are besotted by the myth that the New Deal ended the Great Depression.
Yeah, because he knows better.
This overprivileged prick, you know, it's saying that, oh, well, you know, buck up, unemployed. This is just how it has to be. I mean, the absurdity, I mean, it's so disgusting coming from the likes of him and all these other rich fucks who are in the press. I'm so sick of it because they never identify their place. They just are speaking as if it has some sort of relation to the real world. And it's like, he is so disgusting.
Well, it's all filed under the subheading of I've Got Nine, Screw You, right?
Well, yeah, but it's just so, you know, written in this sort of always couched in some, you know, psychologist, with this guy, some psychologist, latest psychologist he's read. Have you noticed that with him? A lot of his writing is related to these other freakish privileged people, usually in the psychology world to justify, you know, the sort of permanent economic malaise.
Right, and psychologists have all the answers. Just ask Dwayne Buck.
Well, you know, come on. That's what I mean. No, well, yeah, that's the outrageous example of the sort of persistent racism that
1997, that trial went down. I mean,
yeah, it's not really surprising because, you know, no matter what they want to tell us, no one's going to tell me that there's a non-racial reason that 10%, and I repeat, 10% of all black people in this country are locked up. I mean, that number...
How do you hear a number like that and not just be stunned?
Yeah, I'm just saying. That's what's real, and it's kind of like... When I hear a story like that, where you have some cracker in a cracker court coming up with some idea that, oh, we're going to put you away forever and kill you because we know your skin color means that you're going to commit more crimes later, well, shit. I guess I see why the Supreme Court had to rule against that one, because that shit is... We don't have a right media, so we don't hear about this stuff until some man is about to be whacked. But then it comes out, and you're like, wow. Shit is deep. And then this poor man in Georgia, I guess it's picking up steam, but we'll see. At this point, I would not be surprised if they just, you know, gas him just because they can. And, you know, because it's...
You know, before it can become any more embarrassing.
Well, just because it's, you know, where is that? And it's kind of like, it's just a Negro, and, oh, by the way, you know, a white person died, so someone has to pay. You know, I mean, the
white policeman. White policeman.
Yeah, the mentality is there, and it's just kind of like, you know, the black person in the White House, you know, be damned. You know, it's still going strong.
But going back to the Buck business, though, that's scary, though, because he's not out of the woods. No, it's not even 30 days. What it is his reprieve stands for as long as the petition for certiorari is pending before the Supreme Court.
Oh, right. So
if the Supreme Court grants cert, then the reprieve stays in place until the case is decided.
Right, but they can just dismiss it too, though, right?
If they deny cert, away he goes, and I don't even know if he gets a second last meal.
Yeah. Well, it's too much. I mean, I couldn't even believe. I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that case, too. That case is. I don't even think that this Mr. Davis even did it. That's the thing about this one. And I've been following that case for years, and the more I hear about it, the more it's just a case of a Negro in the wrong place at the wrong time, let's lock him up, and that's it.
As long as they get to say that they solved the crime.
No, I know, but it's just, it's so blatant. It's just like, my goodness. So we'll see. I noticed that they had, that, you know, at Anderson Cooper now, right, is talking about it. You know, so it's definitely sort of permeated the mainstream. But at any rate, another reason why I called is I'm looking at this. I can't even believe that the U.S. is going to open themselves up to, you know, just some severe hating with this vetoing of the Palestinians.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
No, because I don't know what bubble the U.S. is in. But trust me, the world is looking at this and thinking, okay, well, yeah, this sounds like a good step. So the U.S. is going to completely destroy further credibility. I don't really even... I was reading an article in the New York Times, and it seems like the Obama administration, you know, they are aware of what they're about to do, too, which is another thing that's very disturbing. It's like, wait, you're going to cut your own throat, and you know it. What the fuck? Because this is not cool.
But again, Sandra, this is the politics of fear, because if they don't veto it, if the Obama administration doesn't veto it, then he's going to get you hate Israel to damn death. And I hate that kind of political calculus.
Well, no, but see, but it's really, no, but it doesn't, it really is a no-win situation for the U.S. all around, because it's a no-win situation for Israel. This would put Israel, believe it or not, in a better position.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like, dude, you know, it's a really scary situation. And it's interesting that Abbas is like, oh, no, bitches, I'm going ahead with it. Why wouldn't he? What the hell have they gotten with the U.S. has the nerve to send envoys over there to try to, oh, you need to go back to the table? What table?
Why don't they just go ahead and say all deliberate speed and have done with it?
No, but it's a joke, because Abbas already told his people, what few people he have. I never know what the calculus is there. But he said, this is not going to, you know, the next day is not going to change anything. But he has to show some movement. And the song and dance he's been doing with Israel and the U.S. ain't been working. So I think this move is a good move on their part. And the U.S. is going to be so screwed, because France, the U.K., and Germany, the population is overwhelmingly in support of this move. Now, I'm not saying the government. Keep in mind what I said.
Yeah,
the population.
Right, and those governments know.
The population exerts more, as we see with the euro mess, more pressure on their governments than what we do over here. That seems to be quite evident. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, among other things. I mean, you know, the Hollywood, Florida story, you know, the 6.51% of the voters. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah. And so, you know, but it's just sort of a story that's kind of percolating that, you know, we should keep our eye on, because the backlash could be wicked against the Obama administration in the sort of, at least the Arab world. I mean,
nobody's operating under the impression that this is a decision that the United States has reached independently of Israel. The backlash inside Israel could be hell on earth.
I've been thinking, you know, this is such a bad move for Obama, you know, in lieu of his, you know, the double standards, it just reeks to the high heavens. So, I don't know, I just thought that story was...
Well, yeah, you wouldn't have batted an eyelash, Sandra, if the Bush administration had vetoed that. But, you know, this is the hope and change guy, right?
Right, and also the whole speech in Egypt, you know, it's like, listen, Mr. Obama, you may think people in America are stupid, they don't pay attention, but hello, around the world, they saw what you did. You see what I mean? It's like, what you think? People don't remember that? No, they do. And you're going to look just like what you look like, sort of double-dealing, double-standard fraud. You know, you can't put yourself out talking about how we want to reach out and then pull this shit and think that people are going to be okay about it.
No, because this is not the kind of thing you can solve with a Friday news dump.
Yeah, anyway, so it's supposed to happen on the 23rd is the date that this, you know, and they'll do the veto, and then they can get observer status, at least, if they go to the General Assembly, because the U.S., you know, they don't have a veto down there.
Right.
Now, obviously it doesn't carry the same weight as Southern Sudan. I think that was recognized as a country by the Security Council. So that's a full-blown country. As was Israel, was recognized as a full-blown country by the UN. This is another irony about it all. It's like, Netanyahu, what? You got a problem with them doing what? You know, what the hell? How are you formed? You know, Israel, they got a lot to answer for. How dare they go against an entity that formed their asses, basically. Balfour Agreement much? You know, let's work in a little bit of history here. Wake the hell up, and the UN is what created Israel as it is today.
But, you know, that won't do for the Palestinians.
No, I know, but it's just, you know, it's like...
I really am scared out of all this. Yeah, it's going to make Barack Obama look like crap.
Yeah, it's going to help.
But there's nothing new in that, Sandra. But it will, you know what the councils are inside the halls of power, in Israel? I'm sure they're ramped up and ready to, you know, full battle rattle, as they say. And there are going to be some children dying in the streets of Gaza. and a shitstorm let loose inside the West Bank. If anybody so much as makes a peep about continuing to be held under the Israeli boot.
Well, and also, I mean, Abbas made a comment that I thought was interesting. You know, of course they go on about, you have to recognize Israel, blah, blah, blah. And he said, Israel is there. No one is going to take its legal status. It's a recognized country. I was like, damn, snap. And also, Hamas, they aren't too keen on this move either. See, everybody stands to lose if this goes forward. And, it'll be interesting to watch. I'm definitely curious to see how it plays out because the Palestinians, it's like the last real sort of occupied, blatantly colonial place on earth right now. So they got a huge amount of moral authority behind them. See, that's the problem. And if they get observer status even, that's going to elevate them because right now they only have some sort of legal entity status. I mean, there's so many different bureaucratical whatevers in the UN, but observer status would still be an uptick from where they are now. So I don't blame him for going forward with this, you know?
No. What's that great quote out there that power never willingly concedes its power to people who ask nicely for it? It has to be demanded.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't this that place?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just another path for them to take. And the way the U.S. is flipping out about it, it's just sort of like, well, what did you really think people are going to take whatever options are open if they're pressed up against it. And the ultimate worry for me with the Palestinians is that the U.S. could, along with Israel, completely cut them off economically, even more so than what's going on now, because all the money that comes to the Palestinian Authority, of course, like something out of the India saga, flows through Israel, which I don't know if people are aware of that, and it's sick, man, but that's part of colonialism. So the U.S. could cut off the money in this process, but so far they haven't taken that track yet, because that's even more publicly despicable, but there is that option. So it could get really nasty for the Palestinians.
As if it isn't already.
No, but I'm saying it could even get worse. Anyway,
yeah.
I just thought that was...
No, I'm like I said, I'm glad you brought it up because it desperately needs to be discussed. And, I hate to even think like this, but how are those people who defend Barack Obama at all costs dealing with this? I mean, isn't the corner they painted themselves into getting tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, Sandra?
Well, especially when you think about the biggest advocate of this move is Turkey, and you know that is like just a crying shame for Israel because at one point Turkey and Israel, they had a fairly decent relationship. And that was sacrificed on that boat. I forget the name of the boat. But, you know...
The Marmara?
Yeah, the relationship between Israel and Turkey is pretty much destroyed now, actually. It's not good. And apparently that Libra person is talking to the Kurdish terrorist group, at least as far as...
I was about to say that very thing. I didn't have any research in front of me, but let me guess.
Yeah, and so that's going to be the nail in the coffin for that relationship because of, what is he? He's a fascist. I don't know what else to call that foreign minister. So, as it is, the Turkish authorities are really pushing for this move.
And you know what? Nukes or no nukes? Israel doesn't really doesn't want to get in bad with a bunch of pissed off Turks.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they really Netanyahu has really done a number on how Israel is perceived. You know, they're not doing themselves any favors here. And don't forget the sort of fortnightly marches of 300 to 500
still going on.
It's just like, dudes, you know, do you have really have time to be, you know, trying to keep the boot on their neck? Looks like shit's flaring up in your country with your own population. Anyway.
And that's what the other boot's for, Sandra.
I guess, but yeah, so Israel is, you know, I hate the sort of interwoven in lockstep with the U.S. It makes me feel nauseous. I'm like,
well, it's personally,
sick.
It's personally embarrassing to me as an American to see a foreign power given carte blanche to determine for us what our foreign policy is to an entire region.
I would say
the same thing if it was Japan or Kuala Lumpur or it doesn't matter. But we are not at no anything touching upon the state of Israel. The United States does not no longer has the right to unilaterally decide what is in the best interest of the American people.
Well, you know, and it's also, yeah, no, but I mean, it's just going to be, it's going to be sickening for us to watch over the next, up until this election coming up, because to see the Obama administration go back and forth, right, because that past election in Brooklyn the other day,
no.
They're obviously freaking out. So there's panic in the White House. I think
James Carville was right. Yeah, I don't think he told them to panic, but I think it was more of a reflection of what he probably knows is going on, even though he's not inside the loop.
Right, but there's also the specter of the Susskind book. You know,
I read a little bit about that.
Listen, I mean, I'm not too sure why that's been released, and I don't. Once again, I think they're overplaying their hand because that ain't gonna help Obama to be shown to be some president who's being undermined by his own so-called helpers, and to see that the financial industry is just as powerful as we think it is, where they're pushing around this new president.
Well, but this idea that they've got an old boys' club even inside the Obama White House, and that the female advisors were sort of shut out and cold-shouldered.
Yeah, but this isn't anything to be pleased to hear for him to say, well, I want Citibank to be orally reduced or put into bankruptcy, and to have the likes of that weasel Geithner just ignore him. Oh, anyway, you know what? This phone is going, so
damn.
I gotta go.
I'm sorry. Have a good weekend. An interesting football game going to get played in Atlanta this Sunday. Later, Sandra. Take care. And, let's see, anybody left? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston.
I was just posting some Michael Moore goodness on Facebook. I think last week we were kind of despairing over some dynamics, counterproductive dynamics we see among progressives at times, and I was just reminded pleasantly this week that sometimes we pull it together in amazing ways, and Moore got some great airtime on NPR.
Excellent.
To calls, and then he got some moments of publicity on the Colbert Report as well, and his book went from being his new book, kind of a memoir, Here Comes Trouble, went from being around 200,000 on Amazon's list to about number 40.
And, wow.
Yeah. This weekend, he's going to be on C-SPAN's Book TV as well. And he is going to influence some right-wingers. Not a lot. But he noted during his NPR discussion that when Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, the Bush administration did some polling of their people, their typical followers. And they were very concerned with the percentage of Republican voters who were all of a sudden against the war and were considering not voting for Bush. So I think when left-wingers go on Fox and other right-wing forums, there are some people, not a majority, but some who can be reached. And I think people like Ralph Nader are particularly adept at it. And the ego charge and all those disses of him, I think, are lame. I'd recommend Book TV's in-depth discussion with him when he took calls for 3 hours from right-wingers and left-wingers and had a lot of insight. So,
I'm certainly not suggesting that Ralph is in any way unintelligent. I'm more in my conversation with David Preston, I was more concerned really with the people who push the notion, and it's more of a broad-based thing than simply Ralph Nader. There's something in me let me see if I can work by example. We have this right-wing goon over in the little town not far from me. And there are people who persisted, who are on our side of the debate, who persisted in calling him. And his only response was to start screaming anytime he started losing. And eventually he would hang up on them.
And that's very revealing. It's frustrating and irritating, but it is revealing. But go ahead.
Well, when he doesn't have callers, he's not a very talented man. He's not a talented man at all. When he doesn't have callers, he reads the newspaper to people. And it's about as engaging a radio as listening to paint dry.
Right, right.
And I kept saying, and what I said to my friends was, let him read the newspaper to people.
Either approach, to me, whatever is moving people, some people will just, let it lie, ignore it. Others, they're going to use those forums and to say their piece. And I think, either way it can work. I don't know. I certainly don't have the answers, but I loved what Juanita was talking about earlier when she noticed a caller calling into, I think, C-SPAN's phone segments.
Right.
Talking about doing some segments on mountaintop removal. And that's what I was kind of getting at last week, where sometimes, we're constantly talking about what Glenn Beck or what Perry is saying or Bachman, or what Obama should be saying this, and Ed Schultz should be saying this. Sometimes we have to look at ourselves. What should we be saying it? Where can we say it? C-SPAN's a great forum, underutilized. The Alan Colmes show, it drives me berserk. He gets mocked constantly. The circular firing squad from the left comes out, rapid fire on Alan Colmes constantly. And I'm like, even if you don't like the guy, I like him a lot. I have tons of reasons.
He's a smart man.
He is. And his stamina to put up with what? Who does use his forum that's reaching tens of thousands of people and is reaching areas of the country that we oftentimes aren't reaching with progressive outlets? Alan Colmes. And you can, about him, use his forum. He's begging for more liberals to call in.
And even, if in the sort of commercial analytics of that, at least Alan Colmes having a radio show is a recognition by the Murdoch empire that, what the hell, we'll put a forum out there and we'll sell Buy Gold Now ads on Alan's back because there might be some rube liberals dumb enough to buy this stuff.
That's right. There's that interesting dynamic too.
And I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk the way I put that forward, but you listen to him far more than I. Does he seem to have any handcuffs on? Are there places he just doesn't go?
It doesn't seem that way. In fact, 4 or 5 months ago, he interviewed Noam Chomsky.
Jesus, there must have been heads exploding all over the right-wing world.
Oh, you could hear them. But it was interesting, though, because it did inspire some more liberal callers. And he got calls from some guy in the middle of Kansas. It's like, oh, that was great. I'm a big Chomsky fan. And it's like, where have y'all been? It's usually all these right-wingers who, it was Alan, I think, was making, your caller, Alan, making the point of how incredibly vocal the right wing is. It's completely disproportionate. They're like the loudmouths at the party, and everyone just is kind of slinking away and saying, oh, well, I think I'm going to go now, instead of saying, dude, shut the fuck up. We've got something to say. We're sick of your feminazi talk and your eco-wacko bullshit and your constant attack on liberals. Do you have, the unions and all that stuff? We're just letting these people verbally steamroll us in so many ways.
And that's, that's something that I hope, if we've accomplished anything in the years that we've been at this, Preston, like I said the other night, this is about, creating the conversation space, long form, so that maybe people will feel comfortable talking to other people. And that doesn't just mean people in the line at the grocery store. It means other radio shows.
Yeah.
Because there is something, and I see it a lot. I've gotten emails about it even, about, you know, we don't need somebody that's just as hateful as the other side.
I hear that line all the time, too.
It drives me nuts, Preston. Yes, we do.
We do, and it's not even my style, typically, you know, to get loud and rambunctious and stuff like that. Like, I'm not Mike Malloy, but I think there's a place for Mike Malloy, you know, to give a little dose back, you know. And it's also, it's a question of, it's not so much the form. It's like, what's it?
Well, it's the same
anger directed.
It's the same thing as that guy in Maryland that I talked about last night. You know, his kids are being tormented at school by anti-abortion protesters, and his response to it was to set up an email account and people can contact him, and he's got the contact information for all the right-wingers who have emailed and phoned and mailed him. And he said, what we're going to do, we're going to be polite and we're going to be nice, but we're going to interrupt their lives. We're going to intrude upon their existence to tell them how we feel about them.
Yeah.
And see how they like it. And there, you know, there's something to be said for giving as you have received.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always turn the other cheek.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, try to explain that to the tambourines and granola crowd, will you? I mean, Jiminy.
Sometimes it's turn the table over, you know?
Yeah.
I thought, again, Michael Moore's film, Capitalism, A Love Story, I saw that when it first came out, and I have it was just a lovely evening, and sadly, it didn't do really well. It wasn't like Fahrenheit 9/11. Your lines outside the door, or setting a new record for...
No, but there was information inside that film that I frankly thought was more dynamic and more important than what went down inside Fahrenheit 9/11.
The DVD's rolling, though. It's moving around. You know, the Amazon product section. And then there's the whole, do you use Amazon? Because, you know, Amazon, it's right-wingers, and they donate to the Republicans. I mean, at every turn, you make a suggestion, and it's like... How we can make a noise, do an interaction.
Oh, that's like the...
It's
like
you're always getting blocked. No, don't do that. It's like the PayPal thing that you were talking about.
Yes.
Okay? See, we're constantly...
And
watch
out
for those people. This is a trend. It doesn't come out of nowhere. I think it gets driven by some very sophisticated, demotivating... you know, people throwing sand in our gears, basically, because they know how...
And you know what? Just to address specifically the PayPal thing, I found out something the other day.
Okay.
There is a... Now, everybody kind of got a little upset when I said PayPal charges 3%. So, you know, if that's $3 on 100, if somebody contributes 100 bucks to the horn, then the net to me, us, the horn, is 97 bucks. Okay.
Yeah.
And well, that's just outrageous. Well, guess what, Preston? There is an outfit out there that does electronic transfers for nonprofits. Guess what they charge? 5%.
Oh, I was going to say 3, but I thought that was too cynical. But
what's more, when you go through that process, and I know this because. You know, people are good to us, and I feel like we have to be good to others. My good friend John Watham, the Hurricane Creek Keeper down in Alabama, is involved in litigation against a coal company down there, and I didn't have it. But sometimes, you know, you're just called upon. And so, yeah, I sent $10 to help them with their litigation against a coal company that's poisoning where he lives.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I went through the whole process, it asked me at the end, would you like to increase this by 5% so that the Hurricane Creek Keeper will get the whole $10? And I thought, wow, you know, that's something.
Yeah.
Because 5%. So, I mean, it's all fairly standard, and I understand, you know, I'm not going to criticize anybody's position of conscience. I won't do that. But by the same token, what you're talking about, Preston, with demotivators, is the absolute truth. And it's that again. I think last week we talked about that goodbye to all that article at Truth Out that I've mentioned several times this week as well. It is important reading from the former Republican staffer, who says that, you know, there are elements within the Republican Party whose only job is to demotivate voters. And when you demotivate voters, you wind... I mean, I'm just blown away by this story out of Hollywood, Florida, how, four or 5,000 voters can get away with taking away a person's pension, a person's health care.
Yeah.
And the only way that works is by keeping people away from the polls. And one of the best ways to keep people away from the polls is to say, well, you know, they're all dirty.
That disinspires people. Ari Berman, I think is his name, did a piece in Rolling Stone magazine, and I heard him interviewed by David Sirota, I think, last week, and he talked about the many tricks they're using these days. There's the attitudinal demotivation, and then there's, you know, things they're doing regarding, having to have a license all of a sudden, and whether you have to re-register or not. You know, other countries, and whether felons can vote or not here, oh my gosh, how can you let a felon vote? You know, they've been totally disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of likely Democratic voters. So they love this war on pot so much. These beer barons are there selling all this Paxil and Zoloft and all that you can eat. But no, if you have cannabis, we're going to take your kid, kick you out of school, and we're going to take that loan from you, and we're going to put you in a cage, and on and on and on and on and on.
You'll be lucky to work at 7-Eleven.
Yep. And then try to get a job after you get that on your record. Again, Michelle Alexander, she's totally nailed this in her book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration. And she was kind of ambivalent. She's quite honest, you know, at first, you know, because she's not a smoker apparently herself or whatever, but when she started looking into it, and she was a former head of a chapter of the ACLU, she just became more and more appalled at it, really. And she is a voice, a powerful one these days. You can check her out on YouTube, Michelle Alexander, the new Jim Crow, and she's bringing it, and very much like Frederick Douglass encouraged us to, you know, sometimes it takes a little dig in the field and making some thunder, you know, to get some change, demanding some change. And again, all these voices we need to give the publicity to. We need to be their ditto heads in our own little ways, you know, just speak our piece, whatever forms we can find. Amazon, again, back to Amazon real quickly, how you can utilize that is either negative reviews of right-wing material. It's like shooting fish in a barrel.
God knows they do that to our side.
They do. They do. And again, I say return the favor. And I think our criticisms can often and easily be more substantive.
Yeah, because they involve brains.
They involve that. They involve something other than corporate propaganda or Pentagon propaganda. You can also utilize the space to make links to real useful material, like that movie The Corporation, the Michael Moore stuff. And I constantly get back, people with the usual lines coming back at me, and I get kind of progressive psycho, you know, and I just blow.
Yeah, it's kind of fun when it happens. I had it happen. I put a comment on a YouTube of the song Dixie, suggesting that Robert E. Lee should have been hanged after the war. And you should have seen the crackers just come running out of the box. Oh, it was delightful. And I got to admit, it's like a cat playing with a mouse, Preston. It's kind of fun. They're not real bright. I hate to say this, but I got to get out of here. We are right at the end of the program. I'll be gone for 4 days next week, but hopefully we'll pick the conversation up again soon.
Sure thing. You know it.
All right. Take care, Preston.
You too, Bob.
Bye now. And we have reached the end of the program. One very kind person stepped up and met Dr. John's challenge. We're about one thrifty $250, $10 contribution away from meeting Susan's challenge. So that would, all told, would mean $200 tonight, and that would be wonderful because, like I said, going to be gone a lot of next week, and I know what happens then. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to you for the wonderful conversation, your input via email, and your calls and your participation in the chat room. Chat room's a lot of fun. It's been rolling and rocking along this evening. Thank you all, and thank you for your kind contributions. I try to make sure that I thank everyone by email. If I happen to miss one, please let me know. But I even try to answer them on the fly during the program. It's possible I may miss some over the weekends, and so, but I try not to. But thank you. You're the only thing that makes this all go. It's that simple. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks very much to our blogger, Texas Betsy, and our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. John Fox has been busier than a toothless beaver lately, and so the input that he still maintains is ever so valued. The same for Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He always needs your help, and he provides a lot of content out there beyond the horn programming, and he never sends a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. I'll be with a lot of them next week, and it's going to be a joy and a privilege. As always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Have a great weekend, y'all.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good evening for those of you, for whom this is evening, good afternoon, good morning, good night. G'day. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. It is the beginning of a new week. It is a weird week for me. This is the only, just a reminder, this is the only week that I'll be on air, or the only day this week that I'll be on air, because Ferg, me, and a whole bunch of folks from Coal River Mountain Watch are headed off down Kentucky Way for some... required meetings and teachings and learnings, and yeah, you get the idea. So let's make the best of it. It is Moran Monday, by the way. How could we possibly forget? The Moran certainly won't let us. But I'll be back. Well, we've got it. And let's do this while it's on while it's at the sort of tip of my brain. A week from this evening, we will be having an American History Seminar chat with Dr. Bill and Keith Lilly, Dr. Bill O'Brien and Keith Lilly from the campus of Concord University, Beckley. And so that'll be going on a week from tonight. And then next week's broadcast schedule is, gosh, I hope it's something we can refer to as normal. And after that, the following week gets a little bit weird again because it's on the road to Washington. We'll get through all of this. We really will get through all of this. But we've got this evening to get through, and I think we will get through in good order. With any luck at all, we will be talking long about, 27 minutes from now. We'll be talking with Margaret Flowers. Margaret Flowers, you may have heard on the Molloy program. I'll be talking to her, here about what's going to be going on in Washington, D.C., beginning, on the 6th of October. October 2011 movement. That's October2011.org. And I plan to be there for that. So it should be a good conversation coming your way in about 27 minutes, like I said. Either she's going to dial in or we're going to dial her. One way or the other, we'll get her on the air. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Some other things, some here and there, some this and that, a couple of emails. Apparently, and nobody consulted me, apparently September is Gripe at Bob Month here at the Horn. All griping is free. I got up Saturday morning, or was it Sunday? Let me see. Yeah, it was Saturday morning. No, it was Sunday morning. Got up Sunday morning. To find this in the inbox from a longtime listener. Hey, Bob. And he wants you all to know that it's little letters, B-O-B, small B, small O, small B. Notice the small caps, Jeb says. Here's an idea. Instead of moaning and bitching about donations falling off while you're gone, how about getting the members of your family to fill in? Or maybe your neighbor. Or maybe one of your listeners. Or maybe me. I work cheap, free. The world does not stop because you're not on the radio. Oh, this talking thing is so difficult, laborious, and difficult. I guess if I practiced in front of a mirror for another 10 years, I might be ready. I listen because I like what you say. My family and coworkers are all right-wingers. What's the matter with you? Get over yourself. Like I said, and mercifully, there's only 11 days left in the month. September is Bitch at Bob Month here at the Horn. Well, let's see. The kids don't know how. My lovely wife will be busy taking care of them. Many of my neighbors are right-wingers, too. And frankly, I don't have one of the listeners, I don't have any way of transporting all this stuff to somebody else and setting it up and then turning it around and to bring it back. And no, it doesn't work that way. But I have, over the course of the last 48 hours, gotten over myself. That does not, however, change the fact that donations to the program will fall off dramatically while I'm gone running reruns, because, you know, who wants to listen to a rerun, right? And that is where, thank heaven, that is where Paul from Portland comes in. With an email I received just a little bit ago called the While Bob's Away Challenge. Dear Bob, catching up on podcasts from last week. I heard that you're on the air today and gone the rest of the week. In an attempt to bolster contributions while you're gone, I would like to put forth a challenge. I know that it is hard for people to contribute. I myself haven't contributed since July of last year to help with the septic system. I don't have any real excuse, just an explanation. I'm on student loans now, and the money is only to be used for books, tuition, rent, food, travel, car repair, etc. I'm paranoid about the fact that my loans could be canceled by some Bush administration holdover who would think it fun to pull the rug out from under me for contributing to a liberal show. However, I've been living tight over the summer, and loans are coming in soon. I find myself with leftover money. It is my money, not a loan that I can give. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'm looking forward to getting the graduation notice. You know, it's inspiring to see all of this as it happens. You know, it was just a couple of months ago that we got to start referring to our buddy Horn archaeology consultant John as Dr. John, and hearing from Paul in June of next year that he's gotten his master's will be good news. Sandra celebrated her graduation not too awfully long back, and she's working on a graduate degree now. It's inspiring. Anyway, back to what Paul said. So I'd like to put forth this challenge. I have $50, and it will be the only money I can give Bob until I graduate with my master's in biochemistry this June. I'd like to make it count. So from now until the end of this month, I will match every dollar contributed with 50 cents of my own up to $50 of my own money. I know that most challenges are dollar for dollar, but come on, I'm broke, and I'd like to make my money go further. So if $100 is raised for the challenge, I will give 50 for a total of $150. I don't care how you contribute, PayPal, snail mail, or finding Bob on the street during his trip and putting cash in his hand. Yeah, I'm not going to be on the corner with a cup and a pencil. I just won't. We're not quite down to that yet. Oh, get over yourself, Bob! But I would like to call on members of the Horn family that are usually not regular contributors, Paul says. I know it's hard to contribute due to the economy or a student loan situation like myself, but please contribute. Nothing would make me happier if this challenge was made by 100 $1 contributions from people who are not regular contributors. However, if you're a regular contributor, please feel free to participate. Well, I'll leave it to Bob to name the challenge and to tell people how to let him know that it is for my challenge. Let's all pool together and let Bob not worry about contributions drying up while he's gone this week. Enjoy your time this week, Bob. Walking the walk. Paul from Portland. Well, that certainly seems an appropriate name, the Paul from Portland Challenge. And he's going 50 cents for every buck. So we need $100 to get to Paul's challenge. And that makes for 150. So let's see how that happens during my absence and for the remainder of the month of September. Although it would be awfully nice just to folks generally respond well to these challenges because they see that other people are doing their part, and it I think it helps to build a sense of camaraderie, if you know what I mean. So let's see how this will all work out, And you can just put in the notation. You know, if you go to PayPal, they offer you an opportunity to make a little note. Just put Paul from Portland Challenge. Although, truth be told, as far as PayPal is concerned, I don't think they'll accept anything less than $5. Snail mail is different. And the snail mail address is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. It's right there, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, stands for personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Anyway is fine by me. And a reminder, and just to update you, it happened after we were off air on Saturday. After Dr. John's challenge was met, Susan also issued her own, and that was met over the weekend with a final contribution that came in Saturday or Sunday and pushed us over. So thank you very, very kindly for that. this from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you could stand on a corner with a sign that says, "We'll pontificate for contributions." I don't have the funny hat for pontificating, Ron. Nor apparently do I fill the requirement that I be a former member of the Hitler Youth and anti-aircraft gunner who fired on American and other Allied aircraft. So, no pontificating for me. Pontificate. Ron's feeling frisky this evening. But I'm over myself. I'm completely over myself. Now, where to go this evening? Well, it is Moran Monday. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and, well, who better than to start with, you know, and I had the audio, and somewhere along the way, the machine reset itself, and now God only knows. But I did have the audio. But I don't now. So we don't have to listen to his creaky, crinkly, wrinkly old, nasty old, gooey voice. We can just read the quote. It's Moran Monday. And while there are a lot of Morans out there, Godzilla from Wasilla comes to mind. Certainly, Michelle Bachmann is a Moran. Rick Perry is a Moran who can't even write his own stuff, if you have seen that story. And weird that this is coming from a fellow conservative. The blogger Jennifer Rubin over at the Washington Post has said that Rick Perry did not write a pro-Israel op-ed that was published in the Wall Street Journal as well as in the Jerusalem Post. So I guess, is that technically plagiarism? Taking someone else's work for your own when that was written, when the work that's not your own was written for you? That seems a shade of difference, but probably close enough for government work, as it were. This op-ed, which was, it didn't show up in brown crayon on butcher paper, so that probably was the first dead giveaway that Rick Perry had not written this piece. The piece contains what is referred to by Ms. Rubin as a cherry-picked quote. This from the opening paragraph of the Rick Perry op-ed for the Wall Street Journal and the Jerusalem Post. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of, quote, civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions beset by enemies, unquote. Yeah, that's right. Texas is just like Israel. Because after all, Israel, like Texas, was formed by people who went into a land that was not their own so that they could hold slaves. Oh, wait. If you buy the Exodus myth, the Hebrews were slaves leaving Egypt and went into somebody else's land. Well, either way you slice it, they were beset by enemies, and that makes them just alike. And the whole point of the thing was to attack Barack Obama, naturally. It was to attack Barack Obama. For things that aren't fully, well, maybe they're comprehensible inside the tiny empty space where brains and humans sit that is occupied by vacuum inside the skull of Rick Perry. his idea being that Barack Obama is somehow not pro-Israel enough. Now, as you may recall, on Friday, I believe it was, Sandra brought up the fact that there's a bit of a Donnybrook stewing in the UN Security Council. Because coming up this week, Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority is going to seek full membership in the UN. Now, the way the votes are counted, it has to have 9 yeas and 0 vetoes. Guess who's going to throw the veto? Yeah, the Obama administration that Rick Perry says doesn't like, isn't pro-Israel enough. Now, as Sandra pointed out, this is going to be a monumental screw-up, any way you slice it. Let's see. 4 in favor of the Palestinian bid: China, India, Lebanon, Russia, South Africa. Undecided: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brazil, Colombia, France, Gabon, Nigeria, Portugal, United Kingdom. The UK said to be still refusing to clarify exactly how it will vote when Palestinians bid for full membership. Also noting the fact that a vast majority of the British public support Palestinian statehood. And then in that teensy-tiny list opposed to the bid, Germany. They are fully committed to voting against the full membership for Palestine. And then us. We believe the move would be counterproductive and derail negotiations with Israel. And while not a majority, a plurality of Americans support Palestinian statehood, I think it's probably safe to say that the vast majority of listeners here to the Horn family do. But the whole point is Rick Perry, who said that Obama just, well, he doesn't support Israel enough. Now, mind you, Barack Obama has never stopped the river of money that flows to Israel from you and me. And I don't mean any little old miserable ass dries up in Summertime Creek either. I mean, this is a river of money. Nope. Still going strong. And Israel doesn't want Palestinian recognition in the UN, so what Israel wants the United States to do, Israel gets. Because as Americans, we're no longer allowed to have our own independent foreign policy where Israel is concerned. Frustrating, yes. But somehow, using his brown crayon and some butcher paper, and words that have more than one syllable, Rick Perry managed to write, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, an op-ed that was published in the Jerusalem Post and the Wall Street Journal, a pair of pretty much right-wing rags. Jennifer Rubin said, and I quote, "Perry almost certainly didn't write it. We know that." Oh, this is going to sting. "We know that because his own foreign policy views are rudimentary. A ghostwritten piece so far above his current abilities highlights the concern." Now, she went on and she said, now, of course, it's understandable. Most politicians have these things written for them. And that's true. I mean, that's what all the hacks and flacks are for. And no offense, but when, you know, your third grade class gets its official signed portrait of Barack Obama to hang on the wall because the all 30 kids or whatever wrote off for it, odds are that was done by somebody else. Or as a machine signer. Whatever. It's understood. But the point that Jennifer Rubin was trying to make was that, well, she said, quote, until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors, whew, oh man, this stings. I mean, this is like alcohol on a skint knee. Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication. Man. The pretense of sophistication. I'd suggest that Jennifer Rubin not go anywhere near Texas for a while. Because, I don't know, the Texas Rangers, and I don't mean the baseball club, I mean the law enforcement unit, will pick her up, and the next thing you know, we'll all be standing around saying, please don't execute Jennifer Rubin. I mean, it's dangerous down there. Sheesh. Because you understand that last sentence is kind of Washington speak for he's a moron. Because that's what that means. Until he personally could articulate his thoughts in detail, advisors should forego the pretense of sophistication. No, that's fancy Washington speak for, man, is this guy dumb. And not just a little bit, a whole lot dumb. Yeah, in other words, he can't tell the difference between Palestine, Texas, and, you know, Palestine. Because I'm pretty sure there's a Palestine, Texas. That's just one of those things. Yeah, right. But nevertheless, the thing went out there and is something less than, right, it does not even, there, you read it and you just don't say, oh, well, look, sure, he wrote this. It doesn't compute. Now, here's the fun part. Let's see. Comment from the Jerusalem Post. Comment. The Palestinians' illegitimate UN gambit. By Rick Perry. The historic friendship between the United States and Israel stretches from the founding of the Jewish state in 1948 to the present day. Our nations have developed vital economic and security relationships in an alliance based on shared democratic principles, deep cultural ties, and common strategic interests. Historian T.R. Fehrenbach once observed that my home state of Texas and Israel share the experience of civilized men and women thrown into new and harsh conditions beset by enemies. That still makes my head hurt. Surrounded by unfriendly neighbors and terror organizations that aim to destroy it, life has never been easy for Israel. Today, the challenges are mounting. The Jewish state faces growing hostility from Turkey. Its three-decade-old peace with Egypt hangs by a thread. Iran pursues nuclear weapons supply. Its leaders vow to use to annihilate Israel. Terrorist attacks on Israeli civilians from Hezbollah and Hamas continue. Blah, 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 blah. So maybe in the next T-bait or whatever, Michelle Bachmann can sort of maybe get some of her cred back by asking him if he really, really honestly and for true wrote that op-ed. The fun part, as I mentioned, Rick Perry's advisors on foreign policy, reported foreign policy contacts, Don Rumsfeld and Douglas Feith. I'm going to have to go back and go over the op-ed with a fine-tooth comb and see if I see any references to known knowns and unknown gnomes. Then we'll know it was Rumsfeld. A war criminal in his own right. So that's where we find ourselves starting, and it's time for me to get Margaret Flowers on the phone. It's just going to be a short conversation. And we will go from there. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world go to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do.
Seven and a half minutes before the hour, and I don't want to waste a single second getting to the phones. Margaret Flowers is with us, Dr. Margaret Flowers, an organizer for the October 2011 event coming up in Washington, D.C. October2011.org is the website. Dr. Flowers, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me on tonight, Bob.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I'm very excited about what you all have been working toward in Washington here. Well, just a couple of weeks away, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think we have about 17 days.
I have a feeling it probably feels like you could use another month or two, but these things never work out quite that way. What kind of plans are underway?
Well, we're very excited about the October 2011, the October 6th action in Washington, D.C. in Freedom Plaza. We have thousands of people that have already signed up. People are coming from across the country to join us to stay in Freedom Plaza. And we call this action Stop the Machine, Create a New World. The Stop the Machine is the corporatism, the corporate powers that control our political process and our corporate media message, and then militarism, which causes us to have such a huge presence around the world, stretching our resources thin so that we can't meet our needs here at home. So we will be engaging in resistance focused on that, but we're also calling it Create a New World because we've identified 15 core crises in this country, things like the need for health care, education, jobs, housing, cleaning up the environment. And we're going to be working on solutions because we know that there are evidence-based solutions to each of these crises. And we're going to create a document of specifically where we want to go in this country, what we want to see done.
Well, that's one of the things that strikes me as most dynamic about this is the fact that it is not a single-issue occupation or a single-issue rally, protest, demonstration, whatever word we choose. You're looking at environmental issues. You're looking at political, monetary issues. You're looking at the labor workers' rights issues. What kind of a coalition have you pulled together for all of this?
Well, it's fantastic because people from all of these different issues have come together. Organizations that advocate for these different issues have endorsed this action, and people who advocate for the different ones, because it seemed like we were all starting to come to the same awareness at the same time, is that each of our issues, when we try to advocate for a single issue, we don't have the strength or the numbers of people to really shift the power away from this corporate domination of our political process. And so we end up with, if we get anything passed legislatively, it's so weakened that it's practically ineffective and always seems to benefit the industries that profit. So so many of us were talking about it, you know, we need something more, something better. And all of these issues are connected, particularly for me with health. Our health really does depend on having education, a clean environment, you know, adequate food and water. So they're all connected, and the consciousness really seems to be that the time has come to join together in solidarity and really create some strength in numbers to change things.
Well, the other thing that is remarkable about this is that it is, as far as I can tell, open-ended. And I think that's so very important, Dr. Flowers, simply because If the power people in Washington know that, yeah, okay, so a million people are going to show up on Saturday, they're going to be home by Monday, then they really don't have to listen to us anymore at all, do they?
Right, and they don't. Frequently they leave town. So these Saturday rallies that we've been having for so many years where we bring hundreds of thousands of people to the city are completely ignored. They don't end up having an impact on the policy that's put forth. And so that was something that we also were tired of doing. We really don't have time anymore. The way things are going in this country with the economy, with the environment, healthcare, education, we really can't just wait for somebody else to do this for us or do these symbolic actions hoping they'll have some difference. What a big part of this is becoming less compromising, that we need to say, you know what, this is what we need to meet our human needs, and we're staying until we see some change in that direction. It's also looking not to leaders to do it for us, but empowering ourselves to find ways to put pressure on the system, to undermine the system that we have so that we can start shifting towards meeting our human needs.
Does this include suggestions for actual concrete policy changes as well?
Well, that's what we'll be coming up with during the occupation part of what will be done in the plaza is meeting. We're dividing up into 15 different committees, one for each of the core issues that we've identified. And we want these committees to be, and they are becoming, composed of people who are affected by